Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It's Wednesday, March 6, 2013. I'm Doug Hagman. With me is my co-host, my son, the other half of the Hagman and Hagman Report, Joe Hagman. We have a full house tonight. Folks, you're about to hear 3 hours of unbiased and censored news, analysis, information that you need to know in these very perilous times. Just to remind everyone, new listeners included, we broadcast live each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can find us on the Internet at HomelandSecurityUS.com, as well as HomelandSecurityUS, the number one .tk. That's HomelandSecurityUS, the number one .tk, where we are streaming in high-def video, except when we're not. Anyway, I just want to welcome each and every one of you to the show. Joe, good to have you back.
Glad to be back, and it's going to be a great show tonight. 9 o'clock, we're going to have L.A. Marzulli join us, and it's going to be very interesting.
Talking about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, whatever is on his radar, as I did not get a chance to speak with him, but things have been hectic on my end, so I haven't been in touch with news, I haven't been in touch with people, even our guests, so
yeah, he will be the primary.
Yeah.
Well, I think L.A. Marzulli is going to. Now, for folks who don't know him, you can find his home base is lamarzulli.net. He's a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM. And I think that's probably the first time, I think the first time I ever met him, when I say met him, became aware of him, actually, was with Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. So. And he's a great guy, and he's going to be talking about a lot of things that you're right, that is on his radar. But I think opening the show tonight, folks, I got to tell you, I'm very upset is not the right word. You know, where has America gone? There's really no turning this ship back around, I don't think. A couple of things, Joe, I'll kind of read you in on this as well. We've got a filibuster right now taking place. Why? What is it about? Well, at which point can you, as an American citizen, be snuffed out by an American drone? Now, you know, we've talked about this, and I've actually have emails, and I should go back and send the people an email where they're saying, "Oh, you know, this is not going to happen. You're just fear mongering. You're engaged in doom porn." That was one of my favorites, doom porn, about, you know, taking people out, taking American citizens out, the drones, driving along, you know, we're in your house, and at the whim of the president or the person sitting in the White House can say the word and take you out, even though you're an American citizen, without due process, they can act as judge, jury, and executioner. And Joe, we've talked about this before. But now it's, the senators, a couple of them actually had queried Holder, and Holder said, it's up to the chief executive, it's up to Obama. So now we've got an executive star chamber. And
I did see that today, and what I'm trying to do, people said my sound is bad, so I'm trying to get my other desktop going that I had running before the show, which I was going to try to use first time for the show. And I'm going to try and get that up and running if my sound is in fact bad. But I saw this on Drudge, and I think it's still up here. Boulder says Obama has authority to kill citizens in the U.S. with drones.
Right. And see, believe it or not, maybe in 2001 or 2002, I might have applauded that. And to my and I'm ashamed to admit that. I'm absolutely ashamed to admit that I would have, my mindset was such, well, you know, we were attacked and boy, we need something like this. If there are any enemies running around, any terrorist cells running around ready to, I mean, think of like the TV series 24 or whatever the flavor of the month or year is now. It was my thought, well, you know, they know what they're doing. Well, no, it never should have gotten this far. No one should have ever supported this. No one should support this, because on the heels of this comes a report from the Southern Poverty Law Center. I don't know if people have seen this, where in 2012 they've identified 1,360 terrorist groups or groups that could fit that definition of terrorism, and included in that number are patriot groups, constitutional, pro-constitutional groups, groups that are single issue groups like pro-life groups. And so simply by designating you as a terrorist and not knowing what the parameters are, or not having parameters, at least not legal parameters, the drone program can be used against citizens in a manner that would stifle any type of political dissent. And people will say, well, that's crazy. It never happened. We're seeing a lot of things that we said would never happen. You really want to take that position, ladies and gentlemen, that we're nuts, that this will never happen? It will happen. And we are, in my belief, months away from seeing a drone strike in the United States. With the explanation that it had to be done, because there is an imminent threat, and we are to trust the White House. And not only that, I think we're probably months away from an economic collapse. I don't like the date set. It could be a year, it could be 2 years. I don't know, but to me, it's closer now than ever before. And people look at this and say, well, that's crazy, because the Dow just hit a new record, and what we're into. One of the longest bull markets in the history of, at least in the last, 80 years, 85 years. Look, it's all built on a house of cards. That's exactly what it is. But the Southern Poverty Law Center coming out with a report that the increase in hate or terrorist groups, that could very well be part of Obama's on his short list. There, it's up 813% from 2009. And I know Glenn Beck was talking about this. And how I know Glenn Beck was talking about this is because I had talking to my wife. She was out running some errands, and she called me. She said, you know, I can't believe what I'm hearing on the radio. Glenn Beck is talking about the same thing you were talking about. I said, well yeah. yeah, exactly. And she mentioned this about the concern that she has with respect to these terrorist organizations, and I think we do need to be concerned about this. But Joe, you back? Are you hooked up?
Plugs in the right spot. I'm here. Can you hear me?
You sound like you're talking from a submarine.
All right, hold on.
If people can handle it, I don't know. I'm not. I can handle it. Wow, yeah. For a second there, you kind of.
No better. Okay. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
All right. As we go.
Yeah.
But I think in the present day America, we've reached a turning point in this country, Joe. And I'll tell you what. I think that now Holder and Napolitano, by the way, are creating this new intergovernment agency, this task force, just to address the patriot groups. just to address these the threat of these patriot groups. Think about that. Think about that. What do we do about this? What can we do about this? I think the first thing we have to do is wake other people up, and I know that some people are not they don't want to be woken up about it, but right now the person sitting in that office, I don't care if it's Obama, Bush, or whoever, it's not right for them to act as judge, jury, and executioner. It is absolutely not right. It's totally extra constitutional. It's treasonous is what it is. Treasonous. The second thing on my list. While Joe's getting a sound, taken care of.
Okay, is that better?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what the definition of better is.
All right. I got to fix some kind of, I think it's in my Skype. I'll fix it. I know.
Okay.
Thanks, Troy. He let me know.
All right, Ben. All right, in the meantime, I just want to say this. I think that if people aren't heeding the signs right now of what's taking place, in the economy, John Paulson, clearing out his ties with all U.S. bond or stocks, $14 million worth, I believe it is, and well, just that I think that's just J.P. Morgan Chase selling off all of his shares of J.P. Morgan Chase and Family Dollar and Sara Lee for example, and this is part of it. Warren Buffett selling everything off. George Soros selling everything off as well of all U.S. bank stocks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, more than 1 million shares combined. George Soros getting out, Paulson getting out, Warren Buffett getting out. Are we to believe that these people, these three people, are not acting on inside information? Are we to believe that these people don't have inside information, that they don't see all hell breaking loose right around the corner? And here, like I said yesterday, and I know we've got new people listening tonight, people need to be getting out of the way. I mentioned it yesterday. It was 10 years ago. February 20th, when a deadly fire caused by these pyrotechnic displays killed 100 people and injured 230 others at the Station nightclub in Rhode Island. Remember that? The Great White Band playing there? According to the official investigative accounts, it took less than 6 minutes for the nightclub to be fully engulfed in flames. Now, what does that have to do with anything? Well, think about this. In just over 5 minutes, the lives of every person in that nightclub, there's like 464 people inside. The people, their lives were changed forever. And no one inside that club saw that fire, saw that death coming until it was too late. And that president of the United States is metaphorically comparable to that nightclub and the citizens of the U.S. as its patrons. Our elected officials, past and present, the Federal Reserve, Wall Street elite, the Soroses, the Buffetts, the Paulsons, the Geithners, the all of these people, they are the elite. They are the individuals who lit this fuse. And we can go back in history right down to the Federal Reserve. And if you want to go back further than that, we can. But each and every one of these people are arsonists. That's the difference between the guy that lit that pyrotechnic display at the nightclub and those involved in destroying our national economy. These people are arsonists, and they're intentionally burning our country to the ground. They have no allegiance to the United States, the citizens of the United States, or anything beyond their collective lust for greed in a global economy. And other people, others, are intentionally blocking some of the exits in the very same way those exits were blocked in that nightclub fire. Ultimately, it's just too few people understand what's taking place or have otherwise become transfixed, I would say, by the flames of the pyrotechnics and of the international bankers. And each and every one of you listening to this broadcast, if you have money in the banking system, if you've got money in the stock market, if you've got money in a 401k, you're being looted as we speak. Your money, you're being looted. Now, look, there's nothing we can really I mean, I shouldn't say nothing to do about it. You'd be smart to get out of the way. Start heading for the exits. Get out. Start heading for the exits and get out. Because it's you know, you don't want to be a casualty. You don't want to be trampled to death at that last moment. You want to make sure you've got preparations made. And people might say, well, you're just an alarmist. Well, I hope so. I hope you hear alarm in my voice. Because when you see a sell-off like this, and Mr. Beck was talking today about a 90% market correction, what would that do? Do you realize a 90% market correction, what that would look like? That's not a market correction. That's an explosion or an implosion. Joe, are you back? All right, we'll just kind of hang loose for Joe here for a minute. But this is what's going on, and people wonder why. Well, why are?
So, folks, I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me? Are we back? This is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. I don't know. I'm going to monitor chat for a second here. Can you hear me? Okay, thank you very much. All right, see, we can hear. All right, thank you. I want to apologize for this, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you this. I was told this week that we are indeed being messed with. It's not the platform. We've got redundancies built in, and now we're going to have to find different redundancies. I apologize. I don't know where this is coming from in terms of, like, this evening. I don't know what's going on this evening in terms of how. We are sounding alarm bells on the economy, on the purchases of weapons, on the fact that we've got a DHS insider saying, "Look, it's all about the economy. It's all about the economy. It's all about what's going to be taking place here with respect to the collapse of the dollar." They are gearing up for deployment of these vehicles into the inner cities, and they are reserving some as well for the rural areas. The examples are going to be made in the rural areas for effect and the examples, according to the information I have, are going to be made in the inner cities. That's just for the drama, the effect. But the real work is going to be done against the people who are self-sufficient in the breadbasket in the middle of the country. That's going to be where the problem, or where the big things are going to hit, where the actual workload is going to be done by Department of Homeland Security. So I just want to let people know that if you think you're living out in the middle of Idaho and you're free and clear from any type of harassment by the Department of Homeland Security, you've got the drones, you've got the MRAPs, you've got the entire nine yards to deal with. All right, so I just want to let you know that. Let me double check here, folks. Can you hear me in the chat room? All right. Can you hear me? Somebody in the chat just okay. Thanks, Gunslinger. I like that. Somebody says no. Man, maybe that's a different question. All right. Anyway, that is indeed Joe's reconnecting. By the way, that is indeed what we have to be very very aware of right now is the economy. Like I said, look at what's taking place, and remember what I said yesterday too. If the new people are joining us too, for those who haven't,
all right, you're good.
Thanks.
All right, for those who aren't aware of what we talked about, Joe, you back?
Yes, and how do I sound?
You sound good, man.
All right, sorry about that. That was Troy. I think got knocked off, or Skype knocked them off, but. You jumped on the phone real quick, like Superman, and got
That's
on
right.
there. And I'm sorry I muted you. That was me on accident trying to call back in. So I don't even know if you knew that. But.
Well, no, I just talked and just hoping that somebody would hear me out there. But I find it very interesting. We talk about this kind of stuff. We have redundancy built into the system, and that the platform is, you know, what's going on here. I just don't understand. It doesn't matter if you spend $1,000 or $100. What's that?
Yeah, everybody in the chat says it sounds good now. And it's weird. Me and Troy were talking a couple days ago, and he said every time Skype goes out, when it comes back, the sound's always better. Whatever. I mean, who knows? But anyway, continue on.
Well, all right. It's just I'm raging at the people who are saying everything is fine. Keep doing what you're doing. Ben Bernanke, for example. You know, there's two schools of economic thought, and really, I think it's important for people to understand the Austrian school of thought or the Austrian theory of economics, and then the Keynesian or Keynesian school of theory of economics, which is John Maynard Keynes, very big in the progressive movement. And it's funny because in doing research for the article I was doing, I'm doing this part two of the people of our economic demise. It's absolutely amazing to me how many conservatives, fiscal and social conservatives, stood up for the nomination and for the appointment of Ben Bernanke as Fed chairman, saying, oh, he doesn't adhere to the Keynesian theory of economics. And look what he's doing right now. Of course, who are his paymasters? Bernanke is not the one that's really calling the shots, although he's calling the shots on a micro level, but not on a macro level. Who's calling the shots on the macro level? It's the international bankers. It's the international bankers who are calling the shots. But Bernanke, Geithner, Obama, and every elected official in our government should be tried for treason, in my view. And once they are found duly tried and found guilty, they should be summarily executed, in my view, for treason, because they are going to take this country down economically. Once they take it down economically, we lose our sovereignty. We already lost the Constitution of the United States, and that's another treasonous act that people should be held accountable for. Who in the world gives Holder or Obama or any one of those people the right to kill American citizens without due process? When did the Constitution become null and void? Can somebody tell me that? Exactly when did the Constitution die? What day did it die? Was it the day the Patriot Act was passed?
It died in part.
When did it die?
The Patriot. You start with the Patriot Act. Officially, you start with this is just from me, and I'm sure people who are older than me have a lot better understanding of when the Constitution died. But really, I guess I would say the Constitution died when we signed the power of our money over to an international banking corporation.
I agree. No, I agree with that. I mean, I suppose we could pick a number of dates, but right now, anyone who is not outraged is either a mental midget, part of the problem, or not paying attention. I don't have any other. I'm sorry. If you think what's going on right now is okay, you either have a mental deficiency, or are not paying attention, or are part or are in on it. And if you're not paying attention, I can accept that. If you're not awake, I can accept that. Because man, I wasn't awake, and I didn't wake up until too late. But I'll tell you something.
You didn't wake up too late because. I mean, it's really never too late as long as you understand, what is going on as you do. We are both learning. We're never going to understand everything. And as we talked about last week, or maybe this was just Monday, the knowledge, what's important, what's wisdom versus knowledge, and what is important in that. Because we know that wisdom can be foolish, that a foolish man can be a wise man at the same time. But it's the discerning of the information that, I guess, and what information is important, that's how you find out.
Well, I just couldn't believe I understand that. And I apologize for my rant because, it just gets to me looking at this and seeing the people who are just so clueless. And they're the very people that are going to get run over. And it's trying to, push – it's almost like you're trying to push somebody out of the way of a freight train, for crying out loud, or a semi. I mean, you're risking your own life and trying to do it while pushing that person out of the way.
Yeah, and the level of arrogance that the people in power display, even though they're not the ones really calling the shots, and we know that, it's almost like they get a kick out of, hey, guess what? We can drone you on your own front yard.
And you know what? Let me say this. Those people who say, well, you're just a bunch of conspiracy kooks. If I hear the word conspiracy theory, kooks, theorists, whatever you want to call it one more time, I'll tell you what. Take a few days.
Conspiracy theorists, I don't sort of consider that a bad word, though. It's not a bad word. Because most things in life are a conspiracy, and
by every word has been demonized
to the point where it has become a bad word or it has a bad connotation to it.
Yeah, well, I understand that.
Asking questions is not bad, obviously. You know, wanting to know the truth is something that the Bible says every man should strive for. So. If it involves a conspiracy, which meaning the situation involves more than one person, well, you know, it's not a stretch in too many of these things we see, events taking place.
Well, I want to say this, Joe. After looking at I've been deliberately.
9/11 was a conspiracy based on the government's own report because it involved more than one person.
Right.
You had the mastermind and you had the people who carried it out. That's a conspiracy. So their report is a conspiracy theory.
No, it's not theory. Well, yeah,
it is.
Right. But right. Look, I when we look at our economic system, who is the driving force behind taking our country down? We can see the usual suspects here. We can see the Bernankes of the world, the Paul Volckers, Boy, I tell you, I got to just take a breath. The various people who are taking our country down this financial path of destruction are going to take our country down completely because once the currency goes, everything goes. Our dollar goes. Our dollar has lost 97% of its buying power in the last 100 years. 97%. And
I want to say this. Who was it when I was coming back today? I got to listen to he has a show. I think where Neil Bortz had one. He was running for president. Herman Cain. He was talking about how the stock market is not the value of the stock market is not up. It's the devaluation of the dollar, and he explained it in great detail, or started to explain it in what sounded like was going to be excellent detail.
Okay, that's true, but there's also the new stock market, which has got air underneath it. There's nothing but air underneath this. The trading, all of the trading done is high frequency trading and algo trading. It's not doesn't even involve people. It's computers talking to one another. That's basically what we've got.
Okay,
so celebrate the heck out of this. Anyone listening to this who is celebrating the heights of the stock market, go ahead and celebrate. Party now. Go ahead and have a good time now because you're going to have one heck of a hangover in the morning or whenever that Black Swan event takes place and everything comes crashing down. Because I'm going to tell you, and it's going to take people by surprise like the nightclub fire did. It's going to take people by surprise, and they are going to be totally – It's going to be a life-changing event for every person listening to this broadcast. Your life will change if not during the course of a month, a week, or a day, or even an hour. Your life will change forever, and it's not going to be for the good.
No, it won't. And Mr. L.A. Marzulli is on, wanting to come on. He's scheduled to come on at 9, and...
Let's bring him on.
I just got a call, so I'm going to add him to the call.
All right.
Because he just contacted me and said, hey, you guys on? I think he might have thought he's in California, so we got the time thing going on. It seems like people who don't live in Eastern, the normal time zone, have a hard time with the time zone. I'm not knocking L.A. Marzulli, but it just seems like most people do, you know.
The real time is the Eastern time.
Yeah.
That's the honest goodness time. But, it'll be great to have him come on. And
yeah,
we'll talk. And the other, but just folks, just watch, because what, and I agree with going back to, from what I heard, just the brief bit I heard, the fact that the drone, they have admitted that the drones can be used for American citizens on American soil anywhere in the United States by the whim of one flippin' man in the White House. One man.
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
tell me where. Now you are. I want somebody to send me an email to tell me that this is the America that you're proud of, that you grew up in, and that you know. I'm sorry, I'm done. I'm off.
No, all right. You're right, and there's no justification for.
I've had. I really have. I'm done.
No, when they come out and say you can kill an American on American soil with a drone, and that's legal, it is outrageous, and yet it should be outrageous.
When my neighbors have to pick pieces of me up off the street, or Alex Jones, or Steve Quayle, or L.A. Marzulli, anyone out there telling the truth, then it's going to be, it's going to be a sad day. Or another Waco, or another, Waco and Ruby Ridge. All right, it's going to happen again. I guarantee you. And they're taking away our right to self-defense at the same time. And no one is mad about this. No one is storming the capitals of their own cities or their own states. All right, I'm done. Did you mute me? What?
No, I muted myself. It was coming through saying we were garbled. With that, let's bring on our guest. We are proud to have Mr. L.A. Marzulli on the program tonight. And Mr. Marzulli, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, guys.
Hey, welcome.
You sound okay.
Hey, Doug. Hey, Joe. Great to be here.
Oh, great to have you, my friend. I just want to give you a proper introduction. Mr. Marzulli, for those who don't know him, and I can't imagine anyone not knowing him, been on Coast to Coast a gazillion times. In fact, I think we might have crossed paths on Coast to Coast AAM. But anyway, he's the author of the Nephilim Trilogy. His home base is lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. We will have a permanent link on homelandsecurityus.com for him. He received an honorary doctorate from Pacific International University for his work on the Nephilim Trilogy. He's got a great lecture series. He's a great author, fantastic researcher, and an even better lecturer. With that, welcome, sir, to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Great to be here, guys. Thanks.
Joe, go ahead and take this if you can hear me.
All right. Yeah, I can hear you.
On here.
Yeah, I don't know what people are saying. We're having sound problems. We sounded fine, and I don't know what happened, but we're going to continue. Mr. Marzulli, we didn't get a chance to really speak before the broadcast, and I apologize for that, except a few emails. I guess we'll just start. I want to ask you, what is on your radar? What should we expect in this month of March and what we're seeing with the headlines?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Doug and Joe, thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. And please refer to me as L.A. Those are my initials, L period, A period. Let's suspend with all formalities here. Mr. Marzulli is way too formal, and I go by L.A., and it's just great being here. But lots of stuff is on my radar. Obama, obviously, is going to Israel. I'm sure you've had Tom Horn on and Chris Putnam, and we all know about the Malachi prophecies. I'm watching that. What's been sort of under the radar recently is the ongoing battle in Syria, which is going on almost 2 years. 70,000 people slaughtered by both sides. Bloody civil war happening. 1 million people displaced. Most people don't understand that Damascus is being taken apart brick by brick. Now, does this tie into the Isaiah 17 fulfillment of that prophecy? I don't know. I can't say that it does. But they're still firing Scud rockets in and around Damascus. It's crazy. And while there's not a media blackout, Assad is certainly not taking the front seat, and the Syria civil war is not taking the front seat like it has, let's say, just go a few months ago. Russian warships are still docked there. Apparently, Assad's troops have pulled back from the Golan Heights. That's the first since the 67 war. That's huge. According to a story I read this morning, Hezbollah may have acquired some of the chemical weapons, but there's no way to vet that, so you really can't go with it until you can vet it. And a lot of disinformation, a lot of fog of war, who knows? But look, the Middle East, in my opinion, is the place to watch. The place is a tinderbox. It's bananas. Tied into that, and this is what, I mean, the American people should be tearing their hair out and storming the Bastille, tongue-in-cheek here. But the bottom line is, they talk about the sequester nonsense. Oh, we're all going to be tied up at the airport, and the lines are going to be really long, and scare tactics, we need to spend more money, just like Jerry Brown here is adding another 3 cents onto the gas tax. It's like, he's got no plan. He has no idea. Well, they'll never cut spending, or they can't do that, but they'll definitely keep taxing the people till we're taxed from the morning we wake up till we're in the grave, for crying out loud. Here's what drives me nuts about this. They talk about the sequester, and yet John Kerry, our new Secretary of State, just hands a check to the Muslim Brotherhood for $250 million. What planet am I on? Somebody please tell me where I am and what reality really is, because I don't know anymore. I mean, I can't make heads or tails out of it. That's insane. The Muslim Brotherhood, I've got it on tape, I show it in my lecture series. The Muslim Brotherhood has sat there, over a million people in Tahrir Square, chanting, "To Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions." Hegazi, very fiery imam, standing in Tahrir Square, yelling at the top of his lungs, saying, you know, let no one make a mistake about it. Jerusalem will be the capital of the new United Arab States. And what do? We hand these clowns $250 million. Now, is that to bribe them like we did with Hosni Mubarak for 30 years? And so he'll sort of kowtow and toe the line and do all this? Baloney. Morsi is absolutely sold out to the Muslim Brotherhood. And it is a radical, radical Islamic organization. And that's just some of the things on my radar, some of the things that I watch continually. The crash of the American dollar, the crash of the euro. We see all the nonsense with the drones. Who are these people? Why are there drones in the United States of America? Why is TSA there? Why do I have to take off my shoes when I go to another foreign country and I don't have to take off my shoes? Why is the TSA all of a sudden going, hey, we're going to allow knives back on the planes? What?
Yeah.
I mean, it's we're so far down the rabbit hole, it's appalling. And then you add to that the UFO phenomena, the ongoing UFO phenomena, which, of course, is real burgeoning and not going away. And, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. And we didn't even get into the weather stuff and the 4,000 temperatures broken last June and the record snowfalls, record rainfalls, record droughts. Give me a break, folks. If this is business as usual, then, you know, then I don't know how to play the game anymore.
I love you, man. I love it. I mean, wow, right after my own heart.
Yeah, you mentioned so many things.
Yeah, and if I can ask you.
Where to begin?
I'm kind of curious. What do you see? I mean, we have got so many plays on the stage here, and we're at the final act of every one almost, it seems like. What do you see happening first, or do you see everything kind of a confluence of events, you know, everything happening at the same time or you know, concurrent with one another? What do you see giving way first, if that's possible to even predict?
Yeah, someone asked me that question actually yesterday, and I emailed them, and I said, look, the scenarios are endless. I mean, we can sit here and talk about scenarios of what could happen. War in the Middle East, false flag in the United States, dirty nuke, EMP, solar flare, another Katrina. I mean, it's, you know, another Gulf oil spill. I mean, the scenarios are endless. Anything can happen. If I was a betting man, watch the dollar, watch the euro. The collapse of the dollar has to be sooner than later. You know, when you get people like Gerald Celente and when you get people like Bill O'Reilly coming on Fox News, right, and saying, oh, by the way, the crash of the dollar is going to have to happen sooner than later because we can't keep spending like this. Well, I mean, that's unbelievable when you think about it. For O'Reilly to say that on primetime TV, I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And, you know, Obama keeps spending. The morons and weasels in Washington keep spending. Americans are going to be taxed more this year than ever before. Where is the absolute outrage? Remember, 53 million people voted for Obama, but 50 million people voted for the other guy. So the country is split on ideological lines. And I think most people, I can't say most, but many, many, many people have had it beyond their eyeballs, up over their heads. They've had it with this whole thing. And unless the Tea Party or some other party or some candidates begin some type of real reform and rein back this crazy government, which is completely In my opinion, just crazy. Just spend, tax and spend. It's nuts. We're going to be spent into oblivion, and it will eventually collapse the dollar. And that could be which triggers everything else. If the dollar falls, then everything else, just like dominoes, will go. If there's a false flag in the United States, remember, they're desperately trying to get martial law here. People go, oh, L.A. Marshall, you're just one of those conspiracy psychologist guys are, you know, always talking. Look, folks, that's what's happening, okay? You don't believe it. I don't care. Believe what you want to believe. It doesn't matter at this point because we're so far down the rabbit hole and most people are asleep anyway. Look at Nazi Germany. Look at the playbook of Nazi Germany before World War II and what Hitler did. And everything of the Nazis did, we basically are doing the same thing. We have the government now controls so many factors of the economy. It is unbelievable. That, my friend, is fascism. When the government is so big and partners with private industry, that's fascism, and we are here, you know, in case anyone didn't know. We are living in a semi-fascist state. Now, it's still the America that we know, but God forbid you stand up at graduation and have a prayer, you know? I mean, you can't do that, right? But yet my 16-year-old daughter can get an abortion without telling me about it. But if she has an aspirin in her pocket, she'll be suspended, right? This is how crazy the system is. And I think, you know, rational, sane people look at this and say enough is enough. I don't know what that means. Secession from the Union? I have no idea. But at some point, you just go, you know, guys, what our forefathers fought the American Revolution and war for, you know, we got a problem here because we have taxation without representation. You know, you guys work, I work, okay? I have a ministry, but it's not a 501c3. So I pay taxes on everything. There's no gravy boat here. Everything that comes in, you know, all the books, all the DVDs, speaking engagements, everything is tax. Well, guess what? I make a profit. Whoa! I'm in business to make a profit. Yes, folks, that's right. I'm selling books because if I don't make a profit, I won't be able to write the next book. So I got to make a profit, all right? And I try to do good business. And I try to make a profit. Guess what? My profit's about 20% after all expenses. Guess who I'm going to hand that 20% to on April 15th? Thank you. Thank you. And what have they done for it? Absolutely nothing. And am I really represented? No, of course I'm not. Not at all. And they just handed $250 million to Morsi, the Islamic Brotherhood in Egypt. I rest my case.
Yeah, profit. That's what the government takes after taxes, I think, now. Is that the new law?
Yeah, all profit after anything after taxes is the government, it seems like. At least that according to my accountant.
Take home.
We have an appointment with the accountant tomorrow. We're not a 501c3. You know, we are a for-profit corporation, although that for-profit, I would put in quotation marks because, you know, we're heavily taxed, and of course we have to show, you know, open up our books, and I mean it's just really crazy. But LA, you're right on the money with this. This thing with the Muslim Brotherhood, we are infiltrated here domestically with Muslim Brotherhood, as you well know. In the White House, it's kind of a revolving door of Muslim Brotherhood representatives into the White House, into DHS. They're setting policy, domestic security policy, and people don't understand that. People don't know that. The Muslim Brotherhood has actually got, I think, seven representatives that are members of the Muslim Brotherhood in the State Department, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Executive Office of the White House. And that's how bad it is. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's just alarming. It's just alarming. And, you know, I wrote on my blog today, and I say this with all due respect to people who want to come here. I understand that, okay? If I were living in Venezuela or Peru or Mexico, I'd want to come here too. I understand that. But when the country has 20 million people here illegally, it has changed the very fabric, the very culture of this country. And then you get weasels like Farrakhan standing up, you know, screaming and yelling at the whites who are afraid because we're going to be outnumbered. No, we're not afraid of people of color, my friend, Mr. Farrakhan. That's not the issue. The issue is this. Are we changing what the founding fathers put in place? Are we changing the very fabric of the Constitution? As my hero, Judge Napolitano, says, a government is best, but government is least. Now, we've got a government that is basically trying to manage and micromanage everything American citizens do from cradle to grave. That's not good government. That's oppressive government. That's soft tyranny, or if you want to call it plain old tyranny. And, you know, when a farmer is being arrested for growing crops in his own field, or a kid being arrested for, you know, holding his hand like, or bringing a squirt gun to school, give me a break. Give me a break. This is how far down the rabbit hole we are. When you listen to a radio in the car, and someone is doing a commercial, and at the end of that commercial, there's 30 seconds or 15 seconds of rapid-fire legalese, which is bound to give anyone a headache. This is where we are as a culture. And, you know, it's wacky. But when you bring in 20 million illegals who have no idea of the principles that the country was founded on, no idea, and look at America, and that's what happens in California. It's the elephant in the room no one wants to talk about here in my own state, California. We are short about $10 billion a year. You know where that shortfall comes from? It comes from the illegal aliens taxing the system. What I mean by that, they'll go into the hospitals and they get free medical care. They go to the schools and get a free education. They pay no taxes, and they get everything for free. This is why we are $10 billion in debt per year, shortfall, in California. And no one will address this issue, because if you do, you're a racist. Well, I'm not being a racist here, folks. I love Mexican people. You know, I love all people. But I got a problem with people coming here illegally and changing the fabric of the culture, okay? And, you know, talking about La Raza. Well, let's take Texas, New Mexico, and California and put that back to Mexico. I got a real problem with that kind of stuff. So, you know, you get 20 million people. Some of these guys get the right to vote, and they have no idea of the Constitution. Again, I'm painting with a very broad brush here. There are a lot of Mexican-Americans and Latinos who do. Look at Sotomayor. I mean, she came up through the ranks, and she's a brilliant woman. I don't agree with her ideology, but nonetheless, she's a brilliant woman. I don't agree with the politics, but she's a brilliant woman, and she's living the American dream. She believes in ideals and has an ideology and a worldview that I don't ascribe to. And that's fine. We can agree to disagree. But when you get people who come here and have no idea of what the Constitution is, or how it was framed, how we had to fight to get that, how we seceded from Britain, the Declaration of Independence declared that on this day we are going to break from you because we can't live in this onerous state anymore. Well, I believe that we are back in the same type of state that we were in the American Revolution. And I want to clarify something, guys. I'm not calling for armed revolution here. That's not what I'm talking about. We have two political systems. They are completely corrupt. They should clean house and fire everybody and re-vote everybody in, or new people in, I should say, and start from there. But the bottom line is we need drastic, drastic changes in this country. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see it.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. And folks, we're talking to L.A. Marzulli. You can find him at his home base, which is lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. He also has a blog, which you go to lamarzulli.net. Just go on the left-hand side, click his blog, and he's got a new commentary up today about Chavez, the family fortune at around $2 billion, which, of course, that kind of flows right into what we're talking about. You look at that system, this Venezuelan system. That's just mind-boggling to think Chavez, you know, the Chavez Empire regime could be worth that much. But then again, we're seeing the same thing here, basically. And I like too your point too, Mr. Marzulli, LA, about your schools are rewriting history. And really changing history and changing what our young people are being taught. It's just incredible. It's wow. Joe, I didn't mean to talk over you. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You're sounding a little choppy. I was kicked
out
of our own show. I know. I don't understand it.
I
Mr. Marzulli, I don't know if you're familiar with our sound problems, but they're historical in radio, I think. We have, if it's not our, I mean, we know many, many days we've had sound problems that were not on our end, and some days that they were on our end. But we have very odd things happen that we cannot explain when we have guests on, especially interesting guests. And
you.
It should be a compliment.
Yeah, like you.
Yeah.
But,
I appreciate that. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's happened to me, you know.
Yeah, you have a radio show, too, right? You've got a weekly radio show? How can folks?
It's a one-hour radio show. It's on tomorrow night. It's on the Fringe Radio Network.
Okay. All right. And we can just go to your website, lamarzulli.net. Click on the link, I believe, right, to listen.
That's it. Yes.
All right. Cool.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Well, all right. I mean, we covered a lot of ground here in a very short amount of time. I suppose the Middle East situation, the incident in Benghazi, the murderous incident that happened in Benghazi, I think was, to me, and Joe and I have done a lot of research and investigation on this, what happened in Benghazi, I mean, the United States, the CIA, with Obama as the head, biggest gun-running operation in the history of the planet, arming the anti-Assad rebels, terrorists in Syria, and going to stage a false flag event, using a chemical weapon in Syria to get NATO involvement there, and Russia, Putin had said, look, don't be doing this, World War III is going to start if you do this. Do you see, I mean, this, I see World War III breaking out over Syria a lot quicker than I do anywhere else. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, you're really garbled, but I listened intently, and I think I got what you're asking. Yes, World War III is certainly in the making, and it amazes me how we've gone this far without all hell breaking loose over there. I'm amazed. Perhaps what we read about, he who restrains will restrain. I mean, it's got to be on some level supernatural restraint that it's happening, because when this thing happens, it's going to be a bloodbath over there. There's no doubt about it. When you look at Israel right now, that is surrounded by the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, and, of course, the saber rattling with Iran, which is ongoing. Make no mistake about it, the prize here is to wipe Israel off the map. That's what they want to do. They've said it over and over and over again. And my understanding of prophecy is that that's just not going to happen. Israel will never be pushed back from land again. I mean, once this is it, they've been regathered from the four corners of the earth, just like prophecy states. These are the real Jews that are there. There's some corrupt Jews, just like there's corrupt, goyim over here, if I can use that word. But, corrupt people are everywhere. But those are the Jews. And they have been gathered back, just like prophecy tells us. And Jerusalem now is a cup of trembling, just like prophecy tells us. It's a cup of trembling throughout all the earth. Go back 150 years ago, no one cared about Jerusalem. Now it's on the front page or on the front page pretty much every day as the political forces try to banter and figure out which way, who's going to control it, how it's going to work out. The fact that Obama's coming there with the whole blood moon thing is just fascinating to me. And apparently he's supposed to arrive on the day of the same day as a triumphal entry, which we call, of course, call Palm Sunday. Remember, the fallen one, Satan, is a great imitator. And he always seeks to imitate everything that the Most High God does. So, again, this is something I will watch very carefully. I won't weigh in on it, because it's just speculation. And again, we could speculate, well, was Obama the Antichrist? I mean, it's all over the airwaves, the Lord of the Flies and all this other stuff, and people are blogging about it and writing about it. I'm aware of that. I just can't go there yet because I don't have enough evidence. Let's see what happens when he goes there. Otherwise, you see, otherwise we cry wolf too many times, and then it's like, well, you said that, nothing happened. So I'm careful. I'm looking at it. I understand what's about to come down, but I'm not pulling the trigger on it yet until I see what comes down.
Yeah, and there's both good arguments on both ends. And I think if Obama is the Antichrist, it just seems too easy. It just seems too, the way this is set up, it just seems, for those who can see, it would be, I think there's going to be a person more charismatic.
Yeah,
more completely different from any understanding of what we think a real leader is or what we have now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that. But then again, that's as L.A. Marzulli states, that's all speculation. But I do think that the skids are being greased for something for the final battle between good and evil. And I know, Mr. Marzulli, you've done a lot of work on various supernatural or supernatural, whatever you want to call it, issues. I saw something on your website. I just want to ask you about this. I know we're kind of going off topic here a little bit, but you had done some things, I believe, with Russ Dizdar, we've had on our show.
Russ is great. Great friend.
He's a tremendous. We just think a lot of him. You've got a DVD series with him, right? About the Nephilim.
Well, yeah, Russ and I think were like at 7 conferences last year with each other, which was bizarre. Nothing that we set up except for a couple of them we sort of set up, but the rest of them, we were just asked to speak, and so we did. What's interesting about this is my research dovetails with Russ's research in the sense that I kind of look at it from the sky down, and Russ looks at it from the ground up. What I mean by that, the fallen ones are here and manifesting, certainly the UFO phenomena. Russ, that's from, the sky down. Russ looks at this thing from the ground up as the covens and the satanic ritual abuse happens right here, and they're summoning the spirits. And it all happened, that's on, from the earth upwards type of a thing. So we realize that we're both looking at the machinations of the fallen one and what his end game is. And we seek to warm a church with the books and DVDs and lectures and everything else that we are constantly talking about, constantly warning. We just returned, my partner and I, Richard Shaw, from an undisclosed location where we film Watcher 6. And I think there'll be some groundbreaking information when we release that. I'm also working on a new book called On the Trail of a Nephilim. And much of that information on that 15-day trip that we were on, of course, will be in photographs, will be shared in that book. So it promises to be, sort of a double hitter here in the sense that between the DVD and the book, we hope to really awaken the body of Messiah, the body of Christ, and at the same time point to a phenomena which is ongoing, has been ongoing, literally for millennia. And as Jesus says, the days of Noah, it will be like the days of Noah when I return. I believe that that scripture holds far more weight than any of us ever have imagined. And this is after writing 6 books on the Nephilim and about those times. So this will be the 7th book on the Nephilim and who they were, where they were, but I'm taking a whole different, that's why the book is called On the Trail of the Nephilim. Look, I think we're in for some very dark times. That's the bottom line here. We're already seeing that manifest. The stuff that comes across my desk is just unbelievable. I'll give you an example. And this, by the way, will be in this month's March's News Magazine, which I am now 6 days late getting out, but I promise I'll get it out soon, folks. So if you're listening to this, be patient. I'm on it. But anyway, I had an email from a gentleman recounting a story. He's driving with a lady friend, and they're going home to her place, and he's going to take a right turn and go down this one road. And even before he takes the turn, he starts to act up. What I mean by that, he starts to get very uneasy, and like he doesn't want to go down that road, but he goes anyway. And after a mile or two, there, it's night, under a street light is a man sitting in a lawn chair, and next to him a woman with red hair standing. And when he saw them, immediately he was taken aback by that, and he also began to be very afraid. And he didn't know why he was very afraid. And as the car got closer, he noticed that this guy was well over 7 feet. Even though he was sitting, he estimated him about 7 feet tall. He was real, real thin, incredibly thin, and his skin was pale. At first, he thought that both the woman and the man had like powdered their skin or something. But when they got close, they both realized, the woman, the driver and his passenger, lady friend he's taking home, that this wasn't paint or powder. This was who they were. And as they got close, he was communicated telepathically, which really set him on edge, obviously. And then when he looked at them, he thought that the man was wearing dark sunglasses, and then he sped away. He was absolutely terrified, didn't know why. Well, later on, when he was talking to the woman and describing it, and he mentioned, you know, why was that guy wearing sunglasses? That's when the woman said he wasn't wearing sunglasses. Those were his eyes. And so I've interviewed this guy on a written format, and, you know, a very chilling story. But all that to say this, what he encountered was a black-eyed person, a black-eyed kid, except this was not a child anymore. This was someone over 7 feet. Chuck Missler, Tom Horn, Doug Hamp, myself, and others believe that there's a breeding program going on between the fallen one, Lucifer, Satan, and the human beings of Earth. Whether that genetic or sexual union at this point really doesn't matter. And people want to get hung up in that argument. Who cares what it is? If it's sexual union, fine. If it's genetic, if it's, I don't think it's either or, I think it's both and. Does it really matter? The problem is that these guys are manifesting. The hybrids are manifesting openly.
Yeah.
Openly. Okay?
That's right, Mr. Marzulli. And we're up
and
against
the church.
We're up against
church,
the break.
Okay.
We're going to continue this on the other side. Definitely something we've had guests on in the past talk about. A very interesting topic and something the audience definitely would love to know more about.
And Joe, maybe
we've been talking about this.
Like we've got Tom Horn, and I know we're up against it, but we've got Tom Horn and other people on. Maybe we can turn to L.A. Marzulli, and he can kind of, I don't know, I hate to say dumb it down for me, but, you know, walk me through
it. No, not dumb it down, but, yeah, go back to basics a little bit and then build from there if we can.
Walk me through it a little bit.
That sounds like a good idea.
All right.
Yeah, folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report this Wednesday, March 6, 2013. Our very special guest, L.A. Marzulli. You can find his website at lamarzulli.net, and I will post a link in the chat room so all you guys in there have it. We'll be right back after these short messages.
The AM station's good.
Yeah, do you hear your music?
I'm sorry.
No, I don't hear any music. But,
that's interesting.
You know,
we have no music.
Your dad is really garbled.
Okay. Let me see if we can go to commercial here. Let's try this.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman & Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's canadafreepress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Eileena Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at canadafreepress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
Hold on to your seat. The Hagman & Hagman flight is now taking off. Doug and Joe Hagman have cleared the runway of TSA agents, jihadists, political crackpots, and global elitists. Now get ready for some real news. Here they are, Doug and Joe Hagman.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of this Wednesday, March 6th edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Back with me is my co-host, Doug Hagman, and his very special guest, L.A. Marzulli. Now, that sounds a lot better on my end.
And mine, too. Boy, I'll tell you, I can hear you just fine.
So great, guys. Sit.
All right.
Okay.
It looks like we got our sound problems taken care of, which, whatever they were, they're gone.
I know what they are.
All right.
And it's simple as one click of a button.
All
you got to mute your backup system. There,
who,
pops.
Me?
Yeah.
I did. It was me.
No, on the switchboard.
Oh.
Simple. And Mr. Marzulli, we started this radio show a couple of years ago, and we're learning as we go. So
we still don't know how to what buttons to push. We're crying out loud. Okay, but that's all right. See, operator error all the time. But it's an honor really to have you back on the show, and to talk about things. We've had Tom Horn on and Russ Dizdar and Steve Quayle. Steve Quayle I love the guy. He's like my brother. Okay, but I got to tell you, sometimes he talks like, you know, two stories over my head and talks, you know, 150 miles an hour, well beyond anything I can understand. What are we saying? You're saying that from the sky down, like, for example, that's what you're dealing with, these fallen angels or fallen beings, I think you mentioned. What are we looking at here? What's going on? Walk us through this, if you can. Like, give us a one-on-one on this.
As far as what, the black-eyed kids?
Yeah, like you mentioned about this genetic, the hybrid, all this stuff. I mean, okay.
We believe, when I say we, again, guys like Tom Horn, Chuck Missler, Doug Hamp, myself, Gary Stearman, to name just a few, we believe that there's a breeding program going on. And, again, some of the discrepancy comes from people going, well, you know, fallen angels aren't having sex with the women. Okay, let's just take all that out of the equation. Whether it's genetic or intercourse, doesn't matter. Bottom line is we keep seeing some type of hybrid individual showing up over and over and over again. Now, if it's only one or two times, you kind of go, well, you know, people are smoking something. I'm not going to believe this, right? David Weberle's book, The Blackout Kids, and I've interviewed him. We interviewed him for Watchers 5, which was just incredible. In fact, we named it after his, you know, sort of after his book, Let Me In. The basic deal with the black-eyed kids is, you know, it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night. Sun was out, sun's down, getting a little dark. You knock on the door. So you go to the door, and you look down, and there's two kids, and they're kind of dressed funny. I mean, they're not wearing rags or anything, but they're just, the clothes don't look right or fit right. It doesn't really bother you. They're wearing baseball caps. Their heads are down. And one of them says, hey, mister, let us in. This won't take long. But the way they talk immediately puts you on edge because it doesn't sound right. Or they'll go, is it food time yet? Let us in. This won't take long. And most people, basically everyone that I've talked to, what happens is the fight or flight instinct kicks in, and it's never fight. The door is slammed, locked, people retreat. If they have a weapon, they get the weapon, and these are kids, okay? These are kids, they look like 9 or 10 years old. But I left out one important detail. When you answer the door, and they go, hey, mister, let us in, this won't take long. The person usually goes, well, where do you kids live? You know, what's going on here? And at that point, or shortly thereafter, the children will lift their heads. And this is what the people who encounter these beings are absolutely terrified. There's no whites in the eyes. Their eyes are all black, completely black, no whites at all. And it's not a contact lens, all right? It's not some kind of a spoof.
And I can confirm this.
You know,
hey, Mr. Marzulli, I've never talked to you, live before this and never heard you say this. And I've heard from other people who have said, yes, they meet with people, then some of the people have black eyes. I think I told my dad this last week, black eyes. Remember that, Dad?
Yeah. I had to check your blood level to see what it is. Okay, go on. You have me on the edge of my chair.
Well, so what happens is you see the black-eyed kids, And most people, in fact, everyone that David's talked to, everyone I've talked to, the door is immediately slammed and you go for your weapon or you call your husband or, you know, your wife or whatever. People were terrified by these things. And then when they go back to see if they're still there, they're gone. Sometimes within 2 or 3 minutes later, the kids are gone and there's no trace of them at all. It's very, very creepy, very bizarre. One of the weirdest ones, which we actually reenacted in Watchers 5, and it came from David Weberly's book, Black Eyed Children. And if you're interested in, you know, hearing more about that, I would highly recommend David's book. It's well researched, Black Eyed Kids. David Weberly is the author. Or you can go to my site, lamarzulli.net, and pick up a copy of Watchers 5, because we do interview David Weberly in that Watchers segment. And we also reenacted reenacted the story that David wrote about and what I'm going to tell you about. So this guy is driving in Texas. He lives in East Texas, and his family lives in West Texas, relatives. So this guy likes to drive at night. Put the radio on, big thermos of coffee, you know, all alone, the stars. I mean, I understand that. It's, you know, my wife and I every now and then hop in the car and we just drive up Pacific Coast Highway because it's just a beautiful drive, especially in a full moon. The moon's on the ocean. It's very, very romantic, very beautiful. So I understand it. So the guy's driving. He's in a pickup truck. He's driving from East Texas to West Texas. It's going to be an all-nighter, and he'll arrive there early in the morning and have a big breakfast and what have you. So this guy's driving for 2 or 3 hours, and he's got to relieve himself. So he pulls over the pickup truck, and it's like in the middle of nowhere, according to the story. I mean, there's not a light anywhere, okay? He's in the middle of nowhere. There's not a farmhouse with a little welcoming light twinkling, you know, 2 miles in the distance. Nothing. The guy's in just a real lonely stretch of road. So he gets out of the car, leaves the truck running, right? And relieves himself in front of the car. He turns around, walks around the car, and there by the door is one kid. And the kid says, with black eyes, by the way, "Hey, mister, let me in. We'll go for a short ride." That's a direct quote. "Hey, mister, let me in. We'll go for a short ride." And the guy is, this guy's ex-military, absolutely terrified. And if he hadn't relieved himself, he probably would have wet himself. If he inches to the door, he opens up the door, jumps in the cab, and speeds away. He gets down the road about a mile or two, calms himself down, and starts to think rationally. It's like, well, you know, this is a little kid here. Why was I so taken aback? Why am I reacting this way? This isn't right. And he decides to go back to the site and see if he can find his kid. Of course, he goes back to the site. Kid's not there. No trace. Nothing. And we did a reenactment of that in Watchers 5. It's just a very, very chilling story. I'll tell you another story. We interviewed this woman, Leah Campen, who was fascinating. And actually, the interview with her came about in a very serendipitous way because Richard Shaw was talking about the black-eyed kids I'd given in the book, and we were going to shoot David Weberly. He was coming in, the interview, real creepy stuff. He's telling a friend of his, Terry, and she goes, "Wow, Richard, that sounds really bizarre because my friend Leah called me up last week, you know, having exactly the same encounter you're talking about." Richard goes, "Oh, my gosh." And so we vet the story. Leah flies into Los Angeles. She was actually going to be in town the following week, so how serendipitous is that? And she flies in with her boyfriend, and we interview her. And here's the deal. Leah Campen has no Nephilim dog in the hunt, no UFO breeding program dog in the hunt, no end-time eschatological dog in the hunt, nothing. This woman is a clean slate. She's basically unchurched, has no idea what's going on. You know, it's none at all. And her story is very riveting. She's a runner. So she goes out and she runs, and I understand what that is because I do too as often as I possibly can. And she's in Milwaukee, and she's in this upscale neighborhood. And when she runs in this upscale neighborhood, never sees anybody on the street, never sees any kids. So she's running, and it's around 4 or 5 in the afternoon, getting on dusk, and she sees a boy down the street from her, about a block away. And she notices his clothes, and the clothes are okay, but they just, something's funny with the clothes. Don't fit right, or look right, or can't put her finger on it, but the clothes just, eh. So as runners will do, as you get close to someone you're about to pass, we look up from our run, and we say, good evening. That's what we all, I mean, I do the same thing. Nod, or good evening, whatever. We acknowledge them, you know, just being friendly. So she gets close to the kid, she lifts her head up, and she's absolutely freaked, because what this kid is looking at her, and his eyes are all black. There's no whites at all. Doesn't say a word. I said, what was it like? She said, it was like looking down. His eyes were like looking down a pool, or his eyes were looking down, looking into his eyes were like, was like looking down two dark corridors to a pool of evil below. Her quote, a direct quote from her, not me. I said, who do you think this was? Where do you think this was? Remember, she has no idea about the breeding program, no idea about Nephilim. Her words, not mine. She said, I thought I was looking at the spawn of Satan. And she ran, absolutely ran, as fast as she could away from there. And she had to go back that way. And so she approached me after, like, she was gone for like 3 hours. And normally her runs would take an hour. She's gone for 3 hours. That's how freaked out she was. She finally made it back. And then she had this long conversation with Terry, and that's how we got a hold of her. So as I'm interviewing her, I got David Weatherly's book next to me on the table, face down. And David Weatherly's book on the cover has an illustration of what a black-eyed child looks like. And I say to her, I said, Leah, the person you encounter look anything like this? And that's when I hold the cover of the book up. And she looks at it, and she's immediately taken aback. And, you know, body language is everything. She's like squirming in her seat, getting as far away as possible from the book cover, going, ooh, yes, that's it, ooh, just like that. So this phenomenon is real. It's ongoing. It's actually burgeoning. It's not something we heard about 50 years ago. It's very new. And in my opinion, what we're looking at is the hybrids are being tested. They're just being thrown out, and they're being tested. And they're in a fixed state, and that fixed state is one of malevolency. They are malevolent beings. Now, all that to say this, once again from David Weatherly's book. If you're at all interested in this, folks, highly recommend this book. Pick up a Watchers 5 while you're at it, and you'll see his interview live on camera, which is amazing. But his book is incredible. And in that book, there's a woman. It's the only case we know where someone actually allowed the black-eyed kid to come in. They gave them permission. See, one of the dynamics here is that the black-eyed kids have to ask for permission. Hey, let us in. This won't take long. Hey, mister, we'll go for a ride. This won't take long. Is it food time yet? Let us in. They're always asking to be let in. So this woman has got her 10-year-old kid in a soccer mom van, right? Kid's in the back. She's in the front. Lives in a real small town. Everybody knows everybody else. She leaves the car running with the keys in it. Okay, goes into a small little grocery store. Everybody knows everybody, you know. There are still places in America where you can do that. Your kid's not going to get kidnapped. So she goes in, buys her stuff. She's in there maybe a couple of minutes, that's all. Just last-minute groceries type of thing before she gets home. Goes into her car, looks in the rearview mirror, and she sees her son. But next to her son is a black-eyed kid. And she absolutely freaks. Opens her door. Opens up the sliding door, grabs her kid, runs into the store. She's hysterical. They call the cops. They call her husband. By the time anybody gets there, is nobody in the van. She will not get in the van. She will not do it. She will not drive that car. Her husband, they switch cars. So her husband gets in the van, and he promptly drives down the road. Within a mile, he's in a head-on collision, very bad collision, winds up in the hospital. Now they're dealing with that. The car's total. The kid comes down with this sickness, and the doctors are baffled by it. They can't figure out what the sickness is, and the sickness travels. Once they get it, they think they've isolated what it is. Bam, it'll manifest in a new way, and they're baffled. These people are Christians. Finally, they tell their church. The church begins to pray. The kid is healed. Now, I say that because the kid, it was later found out, the 10-year-old boy, when the black-eyed kid said, "Hey, can I come in? We'll whatever he said, we'll go. Will you let me in? We'll go to your house and play." That's what he said. "Will you let me in? We'll go to your house and play." So the 10-year-old boy said, "Sure, come on in." So he had legal right to enter because of the 10-year-old. And, of course, the havoc that was wreaked after that was unbelievable. So that's the only case that David knows of where someone has voluntarily let these beings in, and the result was, I don't want to use the word catastrophic, but that's pretty close to it.
It sounds like it. Now, a couple of things, by the way. I mean, yeah, horrific stories. And by the way, anyone who knows me knows that I don't run. So if you see me running, you know something very bad is happening behind me. But that said, where do these beings live? I mean, are there human handlers, or are they? I mean, are they? Well, I don't even know what questions to ask. I mean, do they live in?
Okay, let's do this. We have a lot of what LA is talking about is humans experiencing these,
right?
But where they come from? Let's go back to the origins, and I guess just a simple take, LA, on the origins of the Nephilim, or the fallen ones, the people who are still walking the earth today.
Sure. Well, when you read Genesis 6, we get a very bizarre account, and I've said this countless times on radio shows and in my conferences and speaking, but it's a scripture which, unless we understand Genesis 6, in my opinion, it's almost impossible to understand the rest of Scripture. Certainly, we will never understand the great cosmic war that is being raged all around us. We'll never understand that. And we'll never come to grips with the fact that it is move, counter-move, which I write about in the cosmic chess match, between the Most High God, Jesus, and the fallen one. The Most High God and the whole triune Godhead, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, are at war with this fallen entity known as Satan, the fallen one. That's what I prefer to call him. And we go back to Genesis 6 and we read, "The sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they desired them and married whomever they chose. And giants were born. The Nephilim were on the earth and also afterwards." The whole exegesis of that passage comes from, who were the sons of God, who were the daughters of men? And the Bible, as we know, is the best interpretation of itself. When we go to the book of Job, we see the same phrase, which is B'nai ha-Elohim, which is used of the sons of God. B'nai ha-Elohim. It's exactly the same Hebrew verbiage that is used in Genesis 6. It always refers to the angelic host. It never, never refers to mankind. B'nai ha-Elohim, sons of God. The daughters of men, okay, are the daughters of Adam. All right? That's what they are, the daughters of men, the daughters of Adam. They are not, and nowhere does it say, that the daughters are the ungodly line of Cain, or that the sons of God are somehow the godly line of Seth. And this is called the Sethite theory, which was promulgated in about the 4th century by Augustine and others. And we've been down this very dark, twisted road ever since, because it makes no sense. The scripture does not say the sons of God. It does not say the sons of Seth married the ungodly line of Cain. It doesn't say that. It says the B'nai ha-Elohim, the angelic hosts, saw the daughters of men. And they're not the coochie mamas of Cain. They're just the daughters of men. And they went into them, and the Nephilim came from that unholy union. And from that unholy union came the flood. And here's the deal. I write about this in the Cosmic Chess Match because, and also afterward means exactly what it says, and also afterwards. And you don't have to believe that. I'm not going to argue it. I don't care at this point. But how else is Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed? Why is it that we read in the book of Jude that, going after strange flesh, they left their estate in heaven. The angels in heaven left their first estate, went after strange flesh. In like manner, Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, what's the light matter? The light matter is fallen angels leaving their first estate. That's what it is. When the men come in, when the angels come in, why is it the men of the city want to have sex with them? Why is the judgment of the flood so severe that everybody but eight people are wiped out? Everybody but eight people. And I disagree with some colleagues who say that somehow God missed one of the wives of Noah and they were contaminated. I don't believe that. There was a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth incursion. And the same stinking thing is going on today. Why do people have such a hard time getting their heads around this is beyond me. Well, he only had one incursion, and that was it. Baloney. What the heck do you think Sodom and Gomorrah is? It's the same destruction. We see God, the Most High God, who was righteous and loving, met out the same destruction, wipe everyone out in Sodom and Gomorrah, as he does in the flood. So either we serve a homicidal, maniacal, genocidal God, right, who's really just got to be in his bonnet some days and wipe them all out, right? Or something else is going on. And then when we go from Sodom and Gomorrah, we go back to the Israelites going into the Promised Land. Who is there? The Nephilim are there. And the tribes of the Nephilim are there. In each one of these tribes, and there are many, there are over 20 tribes of Nephilim, the Rephaim, Anakim, Nephilim, Zamzumim, all these tribes, the Emims, all these different Nephilim tribes are there. Why are they there? Move, counter-move, cosmic chess match. Move, counter-move. The following knows the Most High God is going to bring the children of Israel right into this piece of property. Why is it 400 years in bondage? Why does ever stop and wonder why God hardens Pharaoh's heart over and over and over again? He hardens Pharaoh's heart hoping that the children of Israel will see his power. So when they finally come up to the Promised Land and they see the giants, because the giants are there, and these aren't 8-footers, folks. These are a lot bigger than that. I'm going to say they were at least 20 feet. That's what I, 20 feet. Goliath was about 12. Og was about 15. These guys are real big. 20 feet. So they come up. The spies are sent in. And they come back and say, we can't go in there. We're like grasshoppers. From that moment on, that is called the Ninth of Av. And that has been a day of calamity for the Jewish people, because God placed a curse on the entire nation of Israel because they did not believe. So he curses them, and he says, this day, the ninth of Av, will become a day of mourning to you. The first temple was destroyed on the ninth of Av. The second temple was destroyed on the ninth of Av. The Jews were expelled from England on the ninth of Av. Were expelled from Spain on the ninth of Av. The gas chambers in Auschwitz, the trains began rolling there the day before, I'm sorry, on the eve of the ninth of Av. The expulsion of the Israeli settlers from Gaza the day after the ninth of Av. The ninth of Av is always a day of calamity for the Jewish people. So finally, after 40 years, that generation is wiped out, aren't they? What is the mandate that the Most High God gives Joshua and Caleb and all the Israelites when they go in? Wipe them all out. Kill them all. Burn everything. Okay, that's genocide. It's genocide. There's no way around that. And I love these people who don't understand the cosmic war, and there are many pastors who don't understand what the Nephilim are, and then try to say, well, you know, these guys were really bad sinners. Excuse me, and this is all in a new book, I'm a Trail of a Nephilim. Excuse me, when Jonah goes in and preaches to Nineveh, they repent. These guys in Nineveh were they basically invented the word barbarian, okay? When you go in and you read what these people did, talk about, you know, heads on a stick all the way around the city, people being skinned, I mean, it's just absolutely barbaric. Guess what? There's grace and mercy, isn't there? God's judgment is withheld. People repent. What do we see in the Promised Land? No. No. There's no repentance. What do we see in Sodom and Gomorrah? No repentance. What do we see in the flood? No repentance. No grace, no mercy. In the flood, Sodom and Gomorrah, or the conquest of Canaan? Zippo. Why? Because the Nephilim are there. That's the key to the scripture. As in the days of Noah, so will it be when the Son of Man returns. Jumping forward to modernity, we hear about in the book of Revelation that there are four criteria for the mark of the beast. Okay? We all know the first one. Can't buy, sell, or trade without it. Okay, fine. Far out. We got that one. The second one, this is where most people don't understand what the mark is. The second one says that anyone who takes the mark, grievous sores will appear on their body. Whoa, what's with that? Why would the mark be causing grievous sores to appear in the body? The third one, anyone who takes the mark winds up in the lake of fire with Satan and his angels. Satan and his fallen angels. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Time out, time out, time out. Where's the grace and mercy? There isn't any. Why? Get there in a second. The fourth criteria is this. It says in those days, what days? The days of the mark. Men and women will seek death, but not find it. Go back to Jesus. As in the days of Noah, so will be when the Son of Man returns. What differentiates those days, other than the fallen angels openly manifesting on the planet, is that the lifespan was between 500 and 900 years old. The chip that is coming, and I've held the prototype in my hand, is from those guys up there, the prince of the power of the air. And he's abducted people, and he inserts this thing in, and it runs at 317 gigahertz, which we think is a clock speed. It's a supercomputer, which is changing the host's DNA. The nerve endings wrap themselves around it, okay? We used to think that maybe the nervous system powered these things. Now we don't think that. We think it's zero-point energy, which is really mind-blowing, and that these chips are prototypes, and they are altering the host's DNA. The mark of the beast, in my opinion, and the reason why the judgment is so severe, just like it was for the flood, and then Sodom and Gomorrah, and then the conquest of Canaan. It's the same judgment. There's never an ounce of grace and mercy. Fast forward to the mark of the beast, no grace and mercy. You take the mark, you're in there. And the reason why, and this is what people don't get, and this is why what I do and Tom Horn and Steve Quayle and others and Doug Hamp and Gary Stearman, we're all talking about this and trying to get people to understand. You take the mark, and that thing's inserted in you, and it begins to change your DNA. You will become modern-day Nephilim. You will become like the seed of the serpent. And that's why the judgment is exactly the same in the book of Revelation, without any grace and mercy, as it is from Noah's flood to Sodom and Gomorrah to the conquest of Israel.
I got to tell you, Joe. I got to tell you.
That's the best explanation.
Thank you.
I've heard. And it was said in a manner that, and this is nothing against Steve Quayle, and he's been on our show many times talking about this, but he knows so much, and he is so informative. He goes through something so fast. And we had some problems with our audio when he was on, specifically about this topic. We didn't end up getting to a lot of we didn't end up getting to talk about a lot of the going back and asking simpler questions. And,
oh, but this makes sense, though. I mean,
right.
This,
and since
finally,
you get it,
I understand this.
Because this is what we've been talking about. And this is what me and my father were having a private discussion before a show the other day about the mark, specifically having to do something to change or alter your soul or your DNA in a way
that
God wouldn't accept you. Because why else are you cut off at that point? And that's as far as we got in our conversation, really. And, that's the only conclusion I can reach, is it changes you in a way that you can't be changed back, or it is
irreversible.
A lot of people have a problem. No, there's no biblical explanation for this. And I've never been to a church that has taught about the Nephilim. Never. And I've been to a lot of different churches. And it's amazing how important what role they played in the Old Testament, obviously, but the role they're playing today, are they blended in to normal life? Are they regular sized people? Or are these the people that keep it in the shadows that only come out, to meet special people in meetings and they're everything very secretive, like you talked about earlier, those kind of people with those eyes.
The goal of the fallen one is to create an army of hybrids which will appear human in every respect, but are not. Giantism will be more than likely a thing of the past. Where we went for our 15-day sojourn and gathered information for my new book, Amitrela ben Nephilim, and, of course, Watcher 6, which is called, the subtitle for that, Watcher 6 right now, is called The Secret Cosmic War. What we believe is that the Fallen One is constantly messing with the genome one way or the other to try to breed out defects and deformities and make this Homo Satanus, as Russ would call it, to look every bit human and yet be completely Nephilim in every way. And it's funny, people are always saying, I'm Nephilim, you know, can I be saved? The first thing I do is go, first of all, you're not a Nephilim, I guarantee you that. And second of all, just the fact that you're asking proves that you can be. Thank you, because these guys aren't interested in salvation. They're not. They're in a fixed state. They're not. They can't be saved. They're not interested in being saved. And for those people who go, well, what about fourth, fifth, and sixth generation? Again, I don't have all the answers, but and we're not sure how these things are reproducing and what the breeding program is and why certain races die out and come back in. This is all, by the way, you know, the rant I just gave you about the Mark of the Beast is in the Cosmic Chess Match. That's where I spent, you know, 350 pages in that book to get to that punchline, because it's move, counter-move, move, counter-move, and it's the last real move of the Fallen One to try to create man in his image, and that mark will make you in his image. It's the seed of the serpent. But we know that he's been doing this stuff literally for thousands of years, and we believe we have found some of the residue of that.
I just ordered that book, by the way, and ladies and gentlemen, I highly recommend. I mean, I just now, I just now did that, and I got to figure out how to add the lecture series to my cart, but I'll do that. I'm dangerous behind a computer, by the way, in case you haven't noticed. But Mr. Marzulli, we had I was, Joe, and you remember this, an intelligence source very close to me had related the story, sent me a write up about his experience with I think what you're talking about, and it was posted on Steve Quayle's website, but I'd like you to take a look at it, because this does have my intelligence source was close to an investigation in London where a scientist was investigating the DNA of a subject that I don't even know how to explain this to you. The DNA strands that were being examined seemed to be wound more tightly than normal. And, normally there are 10 rungs per complete twist of a double helix. But okay. in this case, the DNA was wound more tightly. Plus, there appeared to be like a third DNA strand, which it wasn't. It was identified as like a parasite as opposed to it wasn't a third strand at all. It was a silver-like, thread-like, semi-transparent, serpentine-like parasite.
Wow.
Of very small proportion. This is on record, by the way. I've seen the photographs of the evidence collected, and I'll just leave it at that. But I guess what I'm saying is this kind of what we're talking about here? I mean, I guess that was kind of a very poor question.
The DNA changing aspect, you're saying.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing comes from these enlightened ones. Like, for example, some people think that they're the gods. They're the ones that came down from,
right.
You know, and that we are the cattle. We are the
So they're told the story. The story is passed down through their families as they are from Eve is their mother, but Adam is not their father. Mm-hmm. And there was a cosmic confusion.
That's what they were told, by the way.
Yes.
Not that
they're that
true.
The Bible is false, and the God they worship is real. And
they are using the King James Version of the Bible as their platform game plan. In fact, they know the King James Version of the Bible better than most people do. Or most Christians
right.
do. But that said, there was this write-up, this evidence collected that this person, this illuminated one, if you will, had was not he or she was not special, except that there was a parasitic host in there That sounds an awful lot like what you were just describing, Mr. Marzulli. What I'll do is I'll send you a PDF copy of what I'm talking about for your review.
Yeah, I'm very interested in seeing, absolutely.
But this comes from a first person account from an investigator. In fact, inside the government at the time, dealing with this investigation in London and also here in the United States. It's just an incredible story. But the fact that you mentioned this about the changing of the DNA, man, that now I understand this.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
If we could even go back further, and Mr. Marzulli, because some people still don't understand, and I still don't understand. Now, we know in the Bible it talks about how the fallen angels who followed Satan were cast into chains into the bottomless pit. Now, we know that they also had giants, which were the sons of God's children, the fallen angels' children. Are these, and we have demon spirits on the earth. Some people say the Nephilim, the original fallen angels, are these demon spirits. Others say, well, since they're locked up at the bottomless pit, as it says in the Bible, they can't be. And others just don't know. Or some say that the giants, the Nephilim, the offspring, they're the demon spirits that roam the earth. And we know Jesus cast out a legion of demons and a man at a cemetery into pigs. That's one of the more popular stories about demons. Do you have any idea, either way, if the fallen angels are still locked up at the bottomless pit?
Yeah, absolutely. I talk about this endlessly and try to tell people what I think. Let me get a slip of water here. But first of all, there are only 200 angels that fall on Mount Hermon in the days of Jared, according to the Book of Enoch. Those are the angels which are chained, okay? The other fallen angels are not. If all of Satan's minions are locked up, then what's going on this planet? That's not the case. And who then does Michael fight with Satan and his angels and cast them out of heaven? All that's future. Hasn't happened yet. The 200 watcher angels that you speak of are in Tartarus. They're there. They're chained. When Jesus, interestingly enough, descends into the bowels of the earth, he goes into the lower places, as Peter says, right? Why did he do that? Bullinger, who's a theologian from the last century, basically states that it's a proclamation. He basically goes down and tells the 200 watcher angels that are chained there, hey guys, there's no jailbreak. I got the keys to life and death right here. You're not getting out. That's what he does. It's a proclamation. There's not going to be a jailbreak. Checkmate. Your boy just lost. I won. No one understood the cross. This is all in the cosmic chess match. So he goes down and he proclaims to the fallen ones that are there. Then he leads the souls of men who were in what is known as Abraham's bosom and sets those free. Sheol had two compartments. He sets the righteous ones free. And they go with him. He leaves captivity captive. He brings them. He leaves the captives out of that place. Fallen angels are not demons, and demons are not fallen angels. Fallen angels can manifest openly. Demons need something to inhabit to manifest. Perfect example, you already brought it up. The man of Gadara, who is demon possessed, and Legion, we are many. Okay, cast us out. Don't send us to the pits. Not our time. Whoa, that's huge. What do you mean it's not your time? How do the demons know it wasn't their time? And that gets into a whole three-hour discussion, which I won't get into, but it's in the cosmic chess match. The fallen one can see through space-time further than we can. And the demons know that the fact that Jesus is here, they know what the earth is going to look like towards the end. They know that. And this is the time where Jesus is doesn't look anything like it. So they know this isn't our time. They can see that. That's conjecture on my part, but it's based on, hey, it's not our time yet. How else would they know it's not their time? Unless they can look around and see that, oh, well, look how primitive everything is. There's no cars. There's no airplanes. No. We've seen the future, and this isn't it. It's not our time. Don't send us into where? The abyss. So Jesus then sends them into a herd of swine. They manifest in the swine. The swine rush off the cliff and drown. Demons need something to manifest in. Need something to inhabit, rather, before they manifest. Fallen angels do not. So fallen angels, the 200 that descended in the days of Jared on Mount Hermon, were chained up and locked up. The rest of them are not. Satan is outnumbered 2-1, according to Chuck Missler, according to the Bible. Let me rephrase that. Satan is outnumbered 2-1, according to the Bible. Chuck Missler believes, as I do, that there is a breeding program going on. Because the fallen one is outnumbered, he is desperately trying to bolster his forces by adding hybrids. And that's what this whole thing's about. That's what's going on. That's what the abduction scenario is about, the breeding program, the black eyed kids, and the hybrids that we are seeing. It all goes back to that same thing. And this is why the Nephilim and understanding the Nephilim is so key. Because unless we understand who these guys were, what the plan of the enemy was back then, why does Jesus say it's in the days of Noah? Out of all the Tanakh he could point to, he points to, it's in the days of Noah, we'll be back when I return. Which immediately begs the question, what differentiates those days is the fallen angels having sex openly, creating a hybrid known as the Nephilim. Is it the same type of stuff going on today? Are they producing giants? No, I don't think they are anymore. Our DNA has gotten weaker. That's why they're having trouble. And they keep trying and trying and trying.
Back in Noah's day, too, this is technology was greatly increased, and people were flourishing, and all this came about. And the Book of Enoch, you mentioned that. I've read that many times, and I agree with the Book of Enoch. I actually studied the history of it. A lot of people discredit it and say it's not in the Bible, and there's people that try to debunk it out there. But nothing I've read in the Book of Enoch contradicts anything in the Bible.
I agree.
It's even been referenced, a lot of, it's been read, Jesus read it and referenced it. It's referenced in the Bible. Also, it was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and there is so much information in there. What do you say to the people who would say the Book of Enoch is something that is extra biblical and should not be taken as scripture?
I say that it's quoted in Jude, Peter, Paul alludes to it in 1 Corinthians. I also say that the Book of Enoch is referenced or directly quoted 70 times in the Old Testament. Found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, read by the Church Fathers. Give me a break. Read the book. If you were going to take one book out of the Bible, that's the book you take out. Because it amplifies the Genesis 6 account, and it tells us exactly what's going on then and what's about to happen at the latter days.
Yep, and I just want to add that I've read some of the other Dead Sea Scroll texts and other New Testament Gospels that they say, like the Book of Thomas.
Yeah, it's not anything like Enoch.
The Gnostic stuff, and this is completely different. For those who have
completely
not read
different deal.
The book is the most spiritual book ever, and it talks about, it explains creation, explains how the sun and the moon work and the stars work, what portals they go into and what times and seasons, and it's just a fascinating book, but I want to thank you for explaining that, because there are a lot of people who won't go there or are afraid to go there because it's not in the Bible.
Right.
And if we can go back to the Garden of Eden,
Mr. Marzullo, you mentioned too. I think the way you put it, really, it doesn't matter what happened, or maybe you even debunked the serpent having relations with the beguiling Eve and the big controversy about what that means. Was that where you're going, Joe? I mean, I guess I interrupted that question that you were going to ask, but is that
no? Go ahead.
No, well, I guess, Ms. Marzulli, is that even relevant to ask that question? Did something happen in the garden with Eve and a serpent, or the fallen one, or whatever, to create that?
I'm very familiar with that. And the law of scripture says Cain was of the evil one. Okay, and I get that. And that they base this whole serpent seed doctrine, and that pollutes the whole genome and the line and all this other stuff, and Cain killed his brother Abel. That's not what we're looking at. It says very specifically, Adam knew his wife, and she bore a son and called him Cain. How do you deal with that? I mean, Adam knew his wife. I mean, you can't, I'm not, you know, it's real simple. A 13-year-old can understand that. Adam knew his wife, she conceived, called him Cain. So the only way we can get there is go, well, it says over here Cain was of the evil one, and somehow this was taken from the Bible. So, no. Nothing's been taken from the Bible. Because later on in Genesis 6, we find that the sons of God, the Bnei Elohim, the fallen angels, see the daughters of men, and that's where the mischief starts. And everybody's wiped out except for 8 people. That's where the mischief starts. Not where Sherry Schreiner and others of her ilk, you know, go.
Okay, which I appreciate that. Sometimes I feel like I'm back in elementary school. I've got to have somebody tell me 2 or 3 times. But I think it's an important distinction. I think a lot of people, there's just so much misinformation out there. The way you present this is probably one of the most concise explanations I've heard.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you. Coming from you guys, I really appreciate that. That's great.
Well, yeah. Well, straightforward.
I want to say this. We have a live chat, and there's about 500 people in there now almost. And we've had many shows on this topic before. I've never seen, and there's a lot of it's argument over scripture and different things like, you know, which way a verse can be interpreted or about books. But there's no arguments really tonight. And it's amazing. The way you explained it is the way I understand it. And I couldn't have said it any better or, you know. It's just amazing. It's fantastic.
Thank the Lord for that.
Sometime soon in the near future because we could do a month of shows.
Before the top of the hour, though, I've got to ask you. We're seeing an increase, obviously, in this in what's taking place in these accounts. Are we going to see an exponential increase or an incremental increase in what's taking place? What are you feeling here? I mean, because is this part of men's hearts will fail them? You know, I mean, is this because we're seeing things here that, look, if I open the door and I saw 2 kids, you know, with sunglass eyes, basically, saying, let me in, it's only going to take a minute. There'd be some problems with my bodily functions at that moment. I gotta tell you, and having a bad heart, Joe would have to zap me back to life. But I guess my question is, is that part of what the Bible's referring to? The scripture is referring to the prophecy, men's hearts will fail them. I mean, things like this taking place.
Well, this is exactly what I believe. This is why we're trying to warn the body of Christ. Look, the exopolitic crowd, the guys on the other side of the aisle, look at all the UFO phenomena. And, you know, they're going, wow, can't wait till they land. Can't wait till they reveal themselves. Hooray! All religions will follow their own way. And you know what? They're right. All religions will follow their own way for the most part. Because this is, we don't have time to get into this thing, but it ties back into Darwinism and how Darwinism sets up the paradigm shift and weakens Christianity in that particular worldview and that paradigm. It's being espoused and promulgated by universities, by academia. It's literally everywhere, the Darwinian paradigm, and it's just a theory, and it's never been proved. And I rail against Darwinism. It's the theory of the absurd, absolutely an absurd theory. And if Darwin had known about the deoxyribonucleic double spiral of life, DNA helix, he would have more than likely, in my opinion, rescinded his ridiculous theory, realizing it was just a bunch of rubbish. Penguins beget penguins. Penguins are never begetting beluga whales. And beluga whales don't beget hummingbirds. And hummingbirds don't beget human beings. And on and on it goes. It's just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And why would evolution, don't get me going on the evolution thing, why would evolution, right, somehow produce something which is more favorable? Whoa, that means it, well, favorable by whose standards? Whoa, you mean you have to have standards? I thought evolution was mindless. Without standards, random. There's no random thing. People, look, they're getting better. Better by who? We just made a judgment call. That's not evolution. That's you sitting there going, well, make it look like this. It's absolute poppycock. And Christians are held at gunpoint with this absurd theory. All that to say this. Evolution. When Ben Stein sits down with Richard Dawkins, who's one of the premier evolutionists of the 20th and 21st century, and poses a question, where did life come from? And Dawkins answers, well, no one knows. Stein presses, where did life come from? In your opinion, Dawkins finally says, well, it could have come about in this way. Millions of years ago, in another place of the universe, a race of beings who were highly evolved, who themselves had to have gotten there by some sort of Darwinian process, created in a lab mankind and spread us out through the universe. That's called panspermia. And, of course, it's circular reasoning because, well, who invented them? Who created right. them? Where do they come from? Well, we don't know. Well, maybe another race, and back and back and back and back and back and back. He doesn't know. He's intellectually bankrupt. And so he believes, he puts his faith in the Darwinian theory, and it's intellectual fascism on his point, and the evolutionists, that we would believe another mythos instead of just random chance. We're saying maybe a God, a loving God, outside space-time as we know it, spoke it all into existence. We don't know how he did it, but that's what the Bible says, and it's every bit as good as the nonsense that you come up with. So why can't I believe it? Well, no, you can't, because it's intellectual fascism, and you will believe it if you don't believe. I mean, it's like the fourth light. Here we are.
That's funny. No, the best explanation I've heard about creation is, you know, saying evolution or this was created by accident is like a tornado ripping through a huge junkyard, and what's left is a fleet of 747s that work and run.
There you go, boys.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Marzulli, thank you so much. We're at the top of the hour already. I understand you've got to go. We really appreciate your time. You got about a minute and a half.
I'd love coming on.
You got about a minute. Any closing thoughts here, Mr. Marzulli? Any words of wisdom you can impart with us?
I don't know about words of wisdom, but I just believe that Jesus is coming back soon. If you don't know him, and we're not talking about religion. We're talking about the Lord of the universe who spoke everything into existence. All things were made by him, and through him everything was made, period. Everything was made through him. He loves you. If you hear what I'm saying, he loves you. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, or anything else. He stands at the door and knocks, but he's a gentleman. You've got to invite him in. You've got to say, look, Jesus, I'm not sure what this is all about. But if you're real, come into my heart. I've done some nasty things, and they linger in me, and I can't seem to get rid of them. Please come in. That's all you do. And guess what? When you do that, you get eternal life. And he will make himself known to you in a very real and cogent way, more real than anything you've heard on the radio, because it will be tuned to you, and it will be totally personal. Ask him in, folks.
Oh, man, that's perfect. Sir, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time with us. I know that your time is very valuable.
LeeMarzulli.net is the website. Go there, bookmark it in your whatever your news, recent, most looked at bookmark tab is on your computer, and check it out and keep it there, as it is a great reference, and there's so much there to look at and go through. And further interpretations and further explanations from Mr. Marzulli himself and others on what we talked about tonight.
Well, my friend, God bless you. I want to thank you so much for having you on tonight, and thank you for your time. And we'll talk to you soon. What I'll do, sir, I'm going to send you that write-up as well for your critique.
Yeah,
analysis.
Look, absolutely.
I'll send it to you here in the next 24 hours. Thank you, sir, for coming on. All right, my friend.
I'd like to see it. Douglas and Joe, thanks, guys, for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Let's do it again real soon.
All right.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. God bless.
God bless. Folks, God bless listening. You're listening to the Hagman Report on this, the 6th day of March, 2013. By the way, somebody's got a couple of people with birthdays this month. One, Joe, is going to be turning a solid 30. I want to let you know at the end of the month. Rather interesting. Makes me feel old. I had him when I was 6, so I'm just, he's adopted. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this March 6th, 2013. Stay with us for the final hour.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
If you're stumped, you don't know what kind of gift to give to a friend or a loved one, I'm telling you, you must go to 4physics.com. That's the numeral 4, P-H-Y-S-I-C-S.com. This is your one-stop shopping palace. That's the only way I can put it. I could spend easily an hour on this website. Innovative, fun, educational. There are games, books, weather instruments, unique time-telling devices, jewelry, optical devices, laboratory equipment. Let me give you an example. We all know we can tell time with a sundial. You've seen those advertised. Did you know that you could tell time by the stars? At 4physics.com, you can buy a Horologium Nocturnum. This was a navigational device used in the 15th century by navigators at night to tell time by the stars. It's beautifully crafted in the shape of a pendant made of bronze and pewter or gold and silver. Absolutely a stunning gift. I would be proud to give it to anyone. You must go to 4physics.com. Even if you're not stumped, that's 4physics. That's the numeral 4, P-H-Y-S-I-C-S.com. It's your one-stop shopping palace. Any problems that you have, I don't know what to get Grandpa, I don't know what to get my loved one, that's unique, you will find it at 4physics.com. Please take my word for it. Go to the website, but give yourself a lot of time because you're not going to want to leave 4physics.com.
Folks, I want to tell you about a sponsor of our... Well, maybe not. Maybe I will now. All right. Thanks, Joe. I want to tell you about a sponsor of ours, Granlund Firearms. If you're up in fantastic and beautiful British Columbia, Campbell River, British Columbia, that is, Canada, the salmon capital of the world, stop in at 522 South Dogwood to see our sponsor, to see Carl and Lori Granlund of Granlund Firearms. If you're not up in British Columbia, drive up there now, and I'll tell you what, they've got a full listing of hunting rifles, weapons that rifles that are in short supply down here, I believe. And also, if you're in the States, you can arrange to make a purchase via Granlund Firearms in British Columbia through a federal firearms licensed dealer here. That's my understanding. I've talked to one person that had very minimal troubles of doing so. That is getting purchasing a weapon originating from Canada into the United States. So definitely check out their Gunstock list, their complete line of survival gear, their hunting equipment, and also Carl's great book. He's got a tremendous book. It's Trade Beyond the River, second edition. New hunting stories, pictures, cougar hunting. Terrific book. That's by Carl Granlund. And if you are looking at their website, sign their guest book, tell them Doug and Joe Hagman sent you. That's GranlundFirearms.com. Available off of HomelandSecurityUS.com.
Doug Hagman. One guy that doesn't need a bullhorn to get your attention.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of this Wednesday, March 6th edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. I do not know what day it is. It has been a long 48 hours for me. And just to fill you guys in a little bit, my wife had some minor surgery done. She's doing okay. And I'll leave it at that. But that's what I was busy doing. And
so it wasn't a super secret operation. It wasn't that.
Oh, all right. But keep it accessible. It's not really important. Everything's fine. But I got to tell you, not sleeping and then going to the hospital at 5 in the morning to do a operation and staying the night in there.
Did you do the operation? Did you do it? Or?
No, I didn't do the operation myself.
All right.
The doctor asked if I could help, and I said, I don't have sturdy hands like that. But, no.
Can you imagine me trying that? Holy cow.
It was a lesson in patience, and it was a lesson in a lot of things. But it was interesting. I got a day off radio. I should have called in. I almost called in last night. I was watching helicopter. I was right near the helicopter pad. The room was near the hospital down here. And they were going all night long. So I was just watching helicopters. And yeah, up in the upper rooms there. And you could see the whole, it had a south view. You could just see for, 40, 50 miles, you could see these things coming in.
Wow.
It was pretty neat.
Well, I got to tell you, Joe, L.A. Marzulli, what a tremendous lecturer, speaker, and I couldn't get past his ambiguity. No, I'm just kidding. Really, seriously, what a tremendous guy. What a way to lay out.
Yeah, it's not that. And it's not that,
it's
bad in any way or unintelligent. It was very intelligent.
It was just twice.
Different style and different way of articulating information.
Right.
And some people understand, some people better.
That's a subject that is so hard for me to get. Look, I'll tell you what, folks. I got to tell you this. It's so hard for me to understand.
You understood some things.
Oh, the lights went off. Yeah, the light bulbs went off upstairs. And given the fact that for a year, now it's been a year, I still can't operate the radio equipment, but I can understand. Now suddenly I can understand this concept of the Nephilim and Genesis 6, giants and the flood. I can understand this now. And I don't know if it was his delivery or what it was, but now it's easy. Plus, I did order his book because I've got to read this. And I've got Steve Quayle's book here. I've read that. But for whatever reason, mental block, I don't know. It's just, wow, that's good. But the one thing I got to say, okay, and I'm serious about this. If you do see me running anytime, any place, I'm good for about 10 seconds in running, full out 10 seconds, and then I'm looking for an oxygen tank. But
Unless you're running from spiders, then you got extra 5 seconds.
Spiders are those the children he was talking about. I mean, just picture that. You being on a road. I mean, it'd be like an episode from the Twilight Zone. Being on a deserted road and having all of a sudden this hybrid with, you know, holy moly.
I told you, we talked before the show last week or someday, and I told you I heard a story about this. And it's just
but
so weird.
I don't listen to you. No, I'm just.
No, you don't. That's the most truthful statement you had to tell you all night. No, I'm kidding.
But what was I doing?
You don't listen.
I mean, doing something.
The same way I don't listen to you. Like we hear each other, we hear what each other's saying, but we don't interpret it or it doesn't click with us. It's not going.
Man.
We're not feeling what you know. You're like some people say something a certain way, and you completely understand not only what he's saying, but the interpretation of it. And then some people say the same thing in a different way, and it just resonates better with different people. I found tonight that you and some other people definitely understood it. And those who already understood it, you know, were saying, yes.
See, I told you. Exactly. I mean, that's what they were saying. But you know, and I'm thinking here, okay, if I would answer my house, you know, if I was at home and answer the door, and I drew down on these kids, all right, you know, and would they disappear? Would they run away? Would they, you know, I mean, you can't shoot them, like, that's right. I mean,
no,
it's probably frowned upon being, right?
No, and I was thinking of something the other day. You know, everybody says we're three-dimensional. The three-dimensional world. Some say four-dimensional, six-dimensional. I've heard, you know.
Well, time is not a dimension. I don't believe time is a dimension, though.
I think it's just two dimensions. I think it's spiritual and physical. And
well,
that's all there is to it, but there's probably different layers. There's obviously veils and layers in those two sides.
Holy cow. I don't know. You know, I think we're going to have to go to the phone to get some information. But you're right, though. I mean... It's good versus evil.
Yes. No, I've been doing some reading the last couple of days, and I could talk for forever anyway, but just on some things I wrote down on my notes, some interesting Bible verses, some interesting quotes from other books and other research I was doing. You know, there is what is important and what is not important in today's news as we talk about. And we'll go to the phone, 661-244-9839, if you want to call in, 661-244-9839. And
I need some pressurization.
We'll take calls.
Wow.
But Rand Paul's filibustering, as you said earlier,
right?
The nomination of Brennan.
I'm sorry. When I kind of goofed that up in my tirade, I should have mentioned about that. But brought Brennan into the picture. That's what that filibuster is about. Brennan shackled, and Brennan, instead of being considered for an appointment, should be served papers, should be incarcerated until trial and tried for crimes. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, how many of the people in the legislature, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the executive branch, the different government agents, federal agencies under the umbrella of the DHS and the executive branch should be, I mean, most should be tried, and most probably would be imprisoned if appearing in front of a jury of regular citizens, you know, who work every day for a living.
But you know what?
As gas prices go up at the pump, when they go down, gas went down again today. Hit it like not an all-time low, but some kind of low. Monthly low, a yearly low, a low for 2013.
No, it can't be.
$90 or below $90 a barrel. Yeah, gas went up 10 cents.
Oh, you mean?
Gas station down the street, you know, two nights ago.
Oil.
The price down. Oil's gone.
All right, I got you. Right. Wow. Things are upside down and backwards.
The sequester stuff. Remember we had Jan Napolitano saying there's going to be terrorist attacks and the TSA waits are going to be so long, the delays are going to be excruciating, and you know, people are going to miss their flights, and just all heck's going to break loose. Well, this report from the London Telegraph, airport contradiction Airport contradicts Napolitano's sequester claim. Airports have denied a claim by Janet Napolitano that the sequester is causing long delays for travelers at security screening checkpoints. Now, I know there's been articles about long lines, but I haven't been watching news, reading news, anything. Has anybody seen these long lines? Or?
Well, let me stop you there for a second. Cordial. Now, we had a caller last night, a pilot, and Joe, I got to tell you, and he pointed out a breaking news item that, or a news item that appeared earlier in the day, where now they're going to let you take on box cutters, essentially, on the aircraft.
Somebody said something about using knives, allowing knives on the plane. I'm not sure where I heard that, but...
Well, I got to tell you this, and I'm going to speak to...
For every citizen, anybody who's going flying can bring on box cutters.
Well, yeah, a knife with a certain, I guess it's like a 2-inch blade. You're allowed to have a retractable blade.
Old ladies still going to be beaten up over cups of pudding? Or is that stuff going to go away, too? Specifically the weapon.
Well, you can bring golf clubs and stuff on, too. No.
I was serious when I asked that question. I didn't know if there's like a let up on allowable items, like a big list, or if it's just box cutters.
No, it's knives. It's
edible explode. I mean, seriously.
No, it's knives you can bring on of a certain, with a blade of a certain length, and it's retractable. It's lacrosse gear or golf clubs and things that, you know, don't make any sense. And I just want to say this real quick. You know, I'm a hardcore conservative, social, fiscal conservative. I'm looking back now at the Bush administration and at the various so-called conservatives, you know, in history. And I'm looking at them with a great degree of contempt.
Yeah.
For putting us where we are right here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. But
we're going to phone calls. It'd be funny to read your phone number off and take your call. No. 973, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Gentlemen, good evening. Great show tonight. I'm relatively new to the Hagman and Hagman Report, and I absolutely love your show. I've heard L.A. speak many times in the past, and I think he's right on the mark. My question was, I couldn't understand who the author was that he was referencing for the Black Eyed Kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I
saw it was T.S. Wood, and it was another one that I saw was Weatherby. But I don't know which author he was actually referencing. I was hoping maybe you guys caught that.
I'm looking in the chat room.
Yeah, I posted the question like three times, and now L.A. did mention the author. So the author is in his Watchers 5 DVD. Oh yeah, I do see the chat here. It is Weatherly. Okay, I guess I answered that.
Okay. Oh, Weatherly. Okay. Wow.
And he also mentioned Dizdar. I have this book too, and Dizdar is going to be on tonight with Rob Skiba at 11:00. For those who want to listen to Russ Dizdar do his thing, and he's great.
On which show? I didn't catch it.
Rob Skiba's show starts in about 40 minutes. I can't remember the name of the show that he has on Wednesday nights.
Okay. Well, people should tune into that.
Yeah, that's definitely worth listening to. I think everybody that LA has mentioned are all like-minded folks, and even, you know, you two guys are all in the same category of thinking. So I think it's important that everybody gets on board and just spreads the word as fast as possible because time is short.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
Anything more before you cut your loose?
No, that's it. That's it. I guess I got my question answered, so thanks everybody in the chat room.
All right, and thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. We appreciate the listeners, and if you can, just tell a friend about the show. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, I will. God bless you guys.
God bless you, man.
Have a good night.
All right. I'll tell you, Joe, I was thinking today, I was just thinking today about all of this, and you know, you hear people talking about how bad things are, but you don't hear the spiritual part of this. The spiritual, you hear the political side, you hear the economic and practical side, but you don't hear the spiritual part of this.
No, and you hear the political side. That's all you hear from any news outlet.
Yeah.
They don't cover the real issues. And then even look at the churches. You don't hear the spiritual element in the churches.
That's true.
Think about what was just talked about on our show. And I know that, you know, you can't spend all your time at church talking about Nephilim. But when they are prophesied about, when things are prophesied about taking place again in the times that we are going to see, it is a relevant topic, something that needs a base knowledge about. We as Christians need a knowledge about. And not only do we need a knowledge about it, but really when you get into that information, you open up a can of worms you really can't close, because then you start asking questions about these things, these Nephilim. Well, where did they come from? Who are the fallen angels? Well, then it really gets interesting. I mean, you get in. And this is what people don't understand when they read the Bible. A lot of people see the Old Testament, like I do sometimes, and definitely used to. It seems very boring at sometimes. You know, it's hard to read. And I was like that forever. But at some point, it changed. And now the stories are more interesting than anything that's on TV.
I mean, to me, it's a historical treasure. The Old Testament is actually a treasure of history.
Now the Old Testament and the New Testament, I mean, everything. But just trying to learn, trying to understand the different points in history that the book covers, the mindsets
right.
of the people throughout those points in history, what they were up against. And the days of Noah, well, the earth was filled. There, and when I say filled, I don't know what the earth looked like. I don't know what filled was back then, but we're talking about as well, the book of Enoch says, and the Bible also states about the use of weaponry. Technology was handed down by these fallen angels to the people, and you learn how to work metals, and they learned how to do different things to where they did have technology. Okay, so that all was before the flood. So you're talking about you're talking about thousands of years ago. I guess, I don't know what their technology consisted of, how far they got. Could they have computers? Who knows? One would say no, but there's a lot of archaeological finds that are very interesting. And I'm not talking about, you know, I don't know how to explain.
Well,
you
know, one thing.
What I'm talking about is ancient artifacts found in the ground, you know, not in North America. I'm talking about near Israel, in Syria, Iraq, former Babylon, the Medes and Persians, that kind of stuff. Way back, way from the beginning.
Well, I happen to see a video by Bill Schnoblin. I think his name is Bill Schnoblin. Where this guy was actually involved in Satanism, I mean, hardcore Satanism, and even vampirism and that kind of thing. And he was giving a lecture at the Prophecy Club. This must have been probably dating back to like the mid 90s, 97, I think, maybe. And he was talking about different time periods. And he was talking about the pre-Islamic sorcery and alchemy dating back to about 200 to 600 AD, which you just referenced. You know, about technology and about that type of sorcery and alchemy and changing, working with metals and doing all that kind of stuff. And the Satanistic or Luciferian version of that. So this is like what we talk about. And Bill Schnevelin was talking about how Masonry and Illuminism connects, they're intertwined. And so this is all connected. I mean,
oh yes, it is. And
I guess that's what.
And now that you are further understanding this, maybe it's a good time that we can start doing a show on this, because on a few things that I think
you're telling me. I was holding you back, right?
A little bit on certain topics, like I would hold you back on Benghazi. You know,
yeah, that's right.
that's something that's easy to catch up and learn on. This isn't. This is something that you have to devote yourself to.
And how many, seriously, can you have this conversation anywhere? And folks listening to this program, imagine trying to have this conversation with somebody that, your neighbor. Yeah. I mean,
we talked about this the other day.
Holy cow.
I got another story if you want to hear about what average people are talking about. And I say average people like us, just working people, our audience, and not obviously our audience is awake and understands, but I was sitting with a friend and their family, and they were talking about, started talking about dieting. One of them was talking about dieting. There was a husband and wife that were about your age, Dad, and then a kid that was my age, and Laura. And we were sitting around, and they were saying how they're dieting, and then the guy started talking about chicken wings and how he's going to eat chicken wings that night and watch The Walking Dead. And the other guy was talking about how he lost some weight, and the mother's talking about, you know, how she's got to return some things at a store the next day. And then they started talking about time, and it was interesting because they said how time was getting shorter or speeding up. And then they came to the conclusion between themselves, because I just stayed quiet, that it was because they're older and more responsible and have things to do. And it's not like when you were a kid, but it didn't explain how a almost 60-year-old man next to me noticed this increase in time or shortness in time and how it's increasing very recently. Obviously, he wasn't a kid 2 years ago or 5 years ago, but
I think time is kind of there. I think there's a quickening. That's my view, and I don't think it's due to age, although, well, it's maybe some of it, but I think there's a quickening.
And then they go back to start talking about, you know, there haven't been good movies out lately, and what have you seen lately? And it's mindless garble.
You know, speaking of movies, Joe.
I mean, talk
about it's programming, though. What we're thinking is,
there's such a short period of time on Earth,
right?
To learn, because if you don't learn early enough, it's so hard to relearn, and I've learned that the hard way. But to be taught everything that's wrong about this world, about how it started, about what's right about it, about what's going to happen. This is what we see, our society. A bunch of people who talk about things that are worthless. We talk about physical items being worthless in the spiritual world. Don't store up your treasures on earth, store them up in heaven.
Right.
We're seeing treasures, people worrying about things, not even storing their treasures or doing anything but pleasing themselves, what they want to do, how they want to do it. No, not even a, you think I should do this, Lord, or should,
right,
should I be doing something? Not even a consideration, not even a thought or a fear. Am I not doing something that God wants me to do? That never even enters their mind. So think how lost that is.
Wow, very true. Yeah, very true. And folks, you can just belly right up to the computer to join in the conversation. Just belly right up here. We're having a kind of a family conversation with our extended family. It seems like, and it this is stuff that needs to be talked about, because people are disjointed and off center with things. Everybody is.
Even spiritual people are disjointed off center because they feel the shift. The darkness coming, the change from an evil to an even more evil, like the long elections, the same way people felt that momentum shift. It keeps coming in waves. It's like a tsunami, a spiritual wave, spiritual tsunami waves.
Well, I got to tell you one thing, though, and I might have mentioned this before. I don't know if I don't have the opportunity to listen to talk radio much. I heard a little bit of what today. This is the first day I've heard, and maybe he's mentioned this in the past, whether you like the guy or don't like the guy, it doesn't matter. One thing he said today, he said that he feels, or he felt, that his crew, him and his crew, were under spiritual attack. And I've never heard him say, he could very well have said this before, but I've never heard him say it. And it was something that my wife had said, hey, you know, tune in if you can, or, you know, go back and listen. One of his crew apparently has suddenly got a brain tumor. I mean, how he explained it was this spiritual attack against him and his crew.
And yeah, how I else feel, can I explain it?
Look, I feel that happened. And I know Steve Quayle, Greg Evenson, Russ Dizdar, and even without even asking, Ellie Marzulli, I think all of the watchmen feel this.
Yeah, Nathan Liao.
Henry
Hoover. And the closer you get to his word and his will, the more that you will feel. And actually, I got a good passage for that, but we'll take a call while I get my Bible out.
All right.
As we have callers on hold. Okay, we're going to go to next area code 813. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. 813, you're up live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. All right. They dropped off. If you want to come back on, go ahead. We'll bring you right back up. Area code 703. You're up next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I...
Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, I live in the D.C. area, and, you know, I hear things, and, by the way, I think Rand Paul is doing a great job this evening. But I had a strange conversation recently, actually yesterday. I met some local Arabs. I was studying some of their beliefs as far as like how the difference between the Sunni and the Shias when they're talking about prophecy, Muslim prophecy, and in particular, obviously, the Mahdi in question or their Messiah.
Yep.
And It is something that I think that we're, as Christians and people who are watching, better darn well get familiar with, and I mean quick. And I'll put an exclamation point on that by saying that when they walked away from me, they said, "See you on the battlefield." And I was, you know, expressing to them my knowledge of Christ and you know, what we're talking about as far as prophecy. And let me tell you, if you guys read what the Sunnis and the Shia believe in, you're going to see things like the date of 2015 showing up. You're going to see things like an earthquake happening and defining a loud noise, which would be something along the lines of possibly a weapon of mass destruction event occurring somewhere in the region of Medina, or their prophecies are speaking of is a war among themselves, the Shia and Sunni reality of, you know, their
kind of like what we're seeing now.
Yeah, that's
exactly
been forever.
Like what you're
seeing,
exactly like what you're seeing now. And Damascus is defined as being destroyed, just like ancient Hebrew and our scriptures are talking about. So, you know, you've got the plagiarism of, you know, Islam to begin with, and all the stuff going on with that. But, you know, it's
I heard an
something
interesting
that,
word.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if this is true or not. You might know this. You have some knowledge on Muslim writings. I heard that the Quran makes no reference of Jerusalem.
Not what I was just reading. In reference to the end time events, there is reference to Jerusalem. And it's all none of it's any good.
There's no
none
reference.
It's about battle and war.
Okay. Maybe not in claims to the land is how it was worded. I'm not sure, but I heard that somewhere. I'm not sure where, but just wanted to know.
No, the Jerusalem is mentioned in the Quran, okay? There's a myth there's a major argument theme that Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran, but it is mentioned. However, it's not mentioned in the context of a holy city, which is in contrast with the claims of the Muslims that they have got some holy claim or holy historical claim to the city of Jerusalem, beyond the fact that it is alleged that from the outskirts Muhammad rode his horse and his heel struck the temple Dome of the Rock. That's it. But it's contextually incorrect. But it is mentioned in the Quran. But beyond that, it's. But I'd be very careful with this, because the Imam Mahdi is going to be the savior. Is going to be the antithesis of our Messiah. Okay, I mean that's what it is. It would be like the Imam Mahdi, because we worship two different gods, contrary to what people like Grover Norquist and George Bush and other people and others say. We worship two different gods. So you've got our Jesus Christ, our Savior, for Christians, and then the Imam Mahdi or the 12th Mahdi or the 12th Imam for the Muslims. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's just two different.
Yeah.
My point being is that obviously we're not well versed on their prophetic reality in their scriptures enough to be sure of what we're talking about here. But after listening to them, I'm pretty darn sure that it's not good, and they're defining the same event timing as we have been noticing upon the stage as of late. So all of their actions are geared toward the fulfillment of their Imam Mahdi rising as a result of the war defined in their prophecy, which occurs in Mecca. And the mention of Jerusalem relates to that prophetic reality of that time, which is apparently here and now upon this generation. Just as we would, I think, all agree who are listening to your show, that we're definitely on the precipice of the Great Tribulation period, and we're definitely the end time generation. I don't have any doubt about that. And if you're looking at...
Neither does Scripture.
Excuse me?
No, I said neither does Scripture. It talks about when Israel becomes a nation again, that generation will be the generation that sees the end
of
days.
Shall not pass away until all these things be fulfilled, yeah.
Correct,
That's the parable of the fig tree, and all nations are gathered together, and you see the softening up of the nations around Israel right now through counterintelligence, and then you see the complete destruction of the principal rate of return required to sustain labor, which would define the mark of the beast and the global reality at hand. And then you throw in the Muslim-Sunni factions of the Antichrist religion, and then of course the false prophet of say for instance, hey, the Catholic Church is not exactly a prime example of Christianity being merciful or having a direct order in accordance with our Father in Christ. more to the
no point, not historically
no.
on the former but not in any denomination, really, either, in Christianity.
Right. And as a matter of fact, when I became a Christian, I was an atheist prior to that. If I hadn't had one of those events happen to me, I wouldn't be a Christian. And the first thing that God ever told me was, fear not, go with God. But when I asked concerning what church to go to, he said, don't go to any of them because they're all nuts. He didn't say that. He just said, don't go to any of them. But, of course, I I didn't follow that advice and, you know, but learned as a result, you know, why you're supposed to listen to God.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I just called up.
Well,
I thought that being in D.C. and running into people that are foreigners who are telling you as they're walking away, see you on the battlefield, and they're defining.
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, that's pretty much the well defining. What's Rand Paul is expressing in the silent reality of the president of the United States, in my opinion, that there isn't any good defense right now, and when you have some sort of political correctness for religions or foreign, immigration that hold our Constitution in contempt in a manner that's, to me, equal with the silence that being defined on the Senate floor currently. It's not really surprising at this point when you see the protection of banks, the too big to fail banks that are, defining all the money behind the political system that has established such a environment where you'll have these kind of conversations in the capital city of the United States.
Well, very good. God bless you. Thanks for the call. Interesting bits of information, Joe, to think about and consider, and especially that conversation that he had is kind of chilling, you know?
Reading the Islamic text and understanding what they study, and he mentioned 2015, I've seen that they thrown around, or that you're throwing around as a, some used to say it was the midway of the tribulation. This was back before the Ellen and the Nibiru thing and the Super Bowl thing, and not this last Super Bowl, the one before that. These events that seem to grow in speculation of doom, but never, thankfully, end up happening. The real doom happens by surprise, by an earthquake, tsunami. Look at China and Japan, whether real or not, that they're gearing up for war against each other over some disputed islands. China's gearing up its army and preparing for war, and the United States is preparing for war on its people with Obama and Holder saying, yes, we can not only use drones to kill anyone we want anywhere in the world, we can definitely use drones to kill people in our land. They're probably thinking, are these people serious? We kill people all over the world, in every country, in the Middle East, pretty much. And all over the place with drones. These people are asking if they're exempt from that because they live here. I mean, that's probably their mindset, How dare they? Well, I'll show them, which one's going to get it first. And we have proof of not only what they plan to do, whether it's through drone strike or through some other means, but I want to go through this real quick if I can. This is a list I started making. I started writing an article going from the internment and resettlement operations PDF. From there, you have a KBR job listing for FEMA camp operators available within 72 hours. KBR was granted a $385 billion contract for this in 2006. You have the Enemy Expatriation Act, where they can take away your citizenship without any evidence, along with the National Defense Authorization Act. They can kill you just because they say they can. You have 2 billion bullets bought by the DHS. The checkpoints, now 2,700 armored tanks, 30,000 drones in the sky. You got the new H.R. 390, the National Emergency Centers Establishment Act. Okay. We have Larry Graswell, who had talked, he's a friend of the show and been on the show many times, infiltrated the group called the Weather Underground, or the Weathermen, as they were known back then, who bombed police stations, the Pentagon, killing police officers and other people, including themselves, and got away with it. Larry Graswell infiltrated this group, and they said they were going to, when taking over the government, had no knowledge of any economics, how to take care of the country, had no idea of how to do foreign policy. What they were concerned about is re-educating the people on the way they think, and that people who were pro-capitalist or who would not change from the pro-capitalist mindset would have to be killed. If you were pro-capitalist and your mindset could change, you could be re-educated and re-released back into society. And so you have all these things. You have the S-510, Food Safety Modernization Act. Now you have all this new gun legislation. You have the urban training drills that we see now. There is all this evidence against them planning. I mean, basically what I just read to you is stating, if you read between the lines, and it's not a stretch by any means, that they're going to plan on, while they release thousands of immigrants, illegal immigrants, that they used tons of taxpayer money and resources through hiring of Border Patrol agents to capture these people and detain these people till they were sent back to wherever they were from. But you have all this buildup of things. Now, either they are doing this to prepare themselves against something they perceive to be coming, or something they know to be coming, or against the people.
My vote's against the people. I can't see
any one of them. Any one of those scenarios we are basically cannon fodder. If it's they're going to war against something else, so we'll be caught in the middle. That would be a worst case scenario. And when I say something else, I mean the Antichrist coming in, like Tom Horn says. I mean, maybe they fake an alien invasion or pretend they're aliens. They have, and I've been told this, we talked about this, that the government's scared. They might not know what's coming.
Oh,
they're,
man,
just scared as the people. See, and they try to learn through remote viewing and all these psychological computer algorithms on what people are talking about and searching. They try to see the future so hard. And I think that's why. I'm not sure, but just a couple things I was thinking about.
The buildup and the anticipated confluence of events. I think if you look at to the economic situation, I think that my view is, and pardon me for being gross on the subject, is you're going to have such hunger in this country like you've never seen before. And when the food runs out, you're going to have people actually resorting to cannibalism. I've actually, in fact, there was an account, and I can't verify this, but there was an account of either attempted or discussed or actual cannibalism during the time of Katrina. Now, I don't know. I don't have any firsthand information, but I'll tell you, when you can't buy anything because the dollar is worth nothing, and the stores and the shelves are empty, you're going to have people, going house to house, and I really think that I think they're anticipating an economic collapse. That's my personal opinion, but then again, who knows? I mean, I don't know.
I'm sorry, I was reading a chat, and somebody's talking about a caller. We don't have a caller on right now, but we will bring one on as people are patiently waiting, and we thank you for waiting and holding. Let's see. Area code 651. 651, thanks for holding. You're up next, but you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Joe, Doug, how you doing?
Excellent. What's on your mind tonight?
This is Dion. Remember?
Okay, well, how you doing? Yeah.
Yes.
Kathy's son. So, Go ahead.
No, what's on your
go ahead. Oh, you know, I was listening to Mr. Barzilli, and listening, about ready to climb on board with the let's talk about how everything's coming down around us. But then I was reminded of a phone call I got from my mom today, and I think everybody would rather hear a story like this for a minute. God's still healing people.
Yeah.
Because about a week and a half ago, mom went to the eye doctor because she was having problems with her eyes. And the eye doctor said that her retinas were separating. And that the sight in her right eye, or one of her eyes, was about gone. And the other, they wanted her to come back in a week to see what they could possibly do for the other eye. Well, she went back today. To the eye doctor's amazement, the eyesight in both eyes is just fine. So her and her friends and other people prayed and asked God to heal her. And this eye doctor didn't want to hear that. He came up with all sorts of other things. We got to get you to the neurologist. It could be a brain thing then. Well, wait a minute. A week ago, you told me my retinas were bad. Now they're healed. Now they're fine. She said, I know why. And she just looked at him and said, my God loves me. And she walked out the door.
I believe so much in the power of prayer when it comes to health issues and matters like that. I've seen it in action. I mean, I really have. And I believe that. And how great is that? Retinal attachments, retinas don't really reattach, I don't think.
Was it you guys? You guys had Henry Groover on. Remember, he tells the story about his son.
Oh, yeah.
How he got hit in the eye. Remember? Or he got stabbed in
the eye
or something. And by the next day, that eye was healed, and those doctors were looking at that little boy's eye as it was healing and couldn't believe themselves.
Yep. The power of prayer is out there, and everyone should believe in that and back themselves up with the power of prayer.
Here's the other thing to go along with the times we're in, gentlemen. Jesus Christ told us what? He told us that in those times we would do greater things than he. So I don't care how big a giant is. I don't care how short the Nephilim are. I don't care who it is wants to come in front of me. My God says I can trample on serpents. My God says, I have power over all things. Therefore, I should fear nothing as long as I walk with him and don't turn away.
Great. Fantastic. Well, we're certainly glad for your mom's recovery. I mean, my goodness, that's...
It's good news, and so many people need prayer for healing. And I don't have a list in front of me, but I do have a list somewhere around me. But there are people I talk to and people who have sent emails asking for prayer. And I just will say this, that to all those people, we are praying for you. And I hope to hear from you guys and send us your story as you find yourself making your way through whatever problems it is that you need prayer for, and we want to hear the stories of how the Lord worked in your life. We need to hear those. And caller, I want to thank you for sharing that with us. And
you guys,
I
just one other thing. All the listeners out there, everybody in your chat room, y'all make sure to keep praying for these two gentlemen too, because we're getting close to that time where shows like this will be non-existent. They won't be allowed anymore. So you keep praying gentlemen and gentlemen like them can keep doing what they're doing as long as they possibly can, no matter what. Because there's more and more people
waking up
every day.
Thank you, caller. You just gave me a great idea. We should make up a dictionary of code words that we can say one thing, but it can mean a completely different thing, like a lexicon.
Before you put your energy in that, you probably should show me. Give me a refresher course on buttons here. All right, my friend.
Take care.
Thanks for the call. You have a, God bless you, too. Have a good night. We've got about 4 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, you know what?
Hold on the calls.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone for their time and attention and their patience and their you know, go ahead.
How'd the show go last night, people in chat? I was not here. I did not get a chance to listen to the archive or listen to it live.
Yeah, I don't know. I got some mixed
issues. I talked to my dad this morning, and he said, don't bother coming back. No, he said it was good.
I got mixed reviews.
I just want to, you got a good response from the chat room, so good job. Obviously, you are the veteran here, especially when it comes to radio.
Yes.
You definitely are a radio veteran. Not a professional, but a veteran.
See, it's a dynamic we have. And the dynamic is, it's like a family. We're a family, we can actually relate to, and people can relate to us because we don't agree on everything. And certainly we have families, our own families, that... It's just a great dynamic. That's all it is. And I don't know. But I want to thank people for their patience last night. And certainly,
I might listen to the archive. I never listen to our shows unless we have a special guest on.
And I can't either. I can't either. I just
never
can't.
Do, unless there's something that happened or I'll go to that part. But I think I'm going to go listen to what you had said last night.
Well, you know, just to recap tonight, LAMarzulli.net, what a tremendous guy. Of course, he falls in there with the rest of the stars and Steve Quayle and Tom Horn and Chris Putnam. You know, what a great guy. And he's got his own radio show every Thursday on Acceleration Radio at 9 o'clock Eastern time. I think that's an hour program. So that said... Joe, you know, I'm glad you're back. You'll be back with us tomorrow, God willing.
Yes, I will. And I want to just make this breaking news announcement before we end the show here. Mayor Bloomberg is ready to tackle another a problem that is so out of control, it could engulf the whole state. But luckily, Bloomberg's on the watch. As next on his health hit list, loud music.
Earbuds.
I would like to know how he's going to regulate this. Are we going to have a police officer who has a sound? I mean, my phone has an app on it called, let me look at it here. It's very neat. It's called Smart Tools. You can measure the vibration. You can measure electromagnetic frequency. There's lights on it. There's all kinds of different tools on it, levels, whatever. I wonder if they're going to go around with tools like this. Take the earbud out of your ear, put it up to their device, and measure if the decibel amount is higher than the regulation.
Well, the sad thing about this
is
$250,000
detect it from far away. I don't know. Maybe a mini drone. I mean, they have so many tools at their disposal.
It's crazy. Bloomberg.
Keep your music down in New York. I don't want to see anybody getting beaten to death by the cops for, you know. I mean,
just imagine walking down Fifth Avenue with earbud agreement, a big gulp in your hand in one hand and smoking a cigarette.
A cop with a horse would baton you before you knew it happened. But folks, we're at the end of the show. God bless each and every one of you. We'll be back tomorrow. No guests that I know of yet. I don't think we have anything going either. So it'll just be us, the news. And it'll be a good show. We'll see you then. Have a good night.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.